bit, you know what I mean?
Okay.
So people could know like who's
who. I just put mine in.
Yeah, that's a good idea. We could do that too. I just feel like we should somehow like identify ourselves.
That's a good idea.
Elaine, make sure you could be a part of this.
Hey, Kimberly, you can fix your name if you scroll over your box to the upper right hand corner. There's three dots.
Yeah, I got it.
Way to go.
Yay. All right. Okay. I think we're ready to start. All right. I'm going to call to order a special meeting of the school board for July 23rd, 2020. Time is 7:11, and if we could have a roll call.
Vice President Chung?
Here.
Member Fay?
Here.
Member Kobus?
Here.
Member May?
Here.
Member McCluskey?
Here.
Member Rotroff?
Here.
President Kowalczyk?
Here. Okay, I'm going to just read some of the comments, not all of the comments that we have. There was a link that was sent out so that everybody could read what was sent out. There were a couple people that said they didn't see theirs on there. So since they weren't on there, I will read those specific ones and then one or two extra, okay? First one, since I will say who it's from before I read it, is from Many Concerned Fairview, Lions Park, Lincoln, and Westbrook Instructional Assistance. Dear 57 Board of Ed and Administration, first, thank you for your hard work and planning for the safety and education of our community's children since schools began remote learning in March. We want to know that we want you to know that we understand the decisions you are undertaking are some of the most difficult and complex ones you have ever been asked to make on behalf of the district and community. But we are asking you to consider certain items when making your decisions. Over the past few weeks, we have become increasingly concerned with the push for schools to reopen for in-person instruction. Recent upticks in positive cases and continued deaths indicate that we are heading in the wrong direction from a public health perspective. While we want nothing more than life to get back to normal and to see our students in person again, we have many concerns as to how we as instructional assistants would be able to perform our duties safely. We don't feel as though we have adequately been told how our job description could change due to these circumstances of learning. What will be the added expectations for instructional assistants? We are in contact with students in more than one classroom grade level daily. Therefore, the chance of us being exposed is greater, so the chance of having multiple mandatory 14-day quarantines greatly increases. We do not even have 14 sick days. How will this work? How does social distancing apply for students who need sensory breaks, one-on-one instruction, bathroom assistance? When a child gets a bloody nose or falls at recess, how are injuries handled? What extra precautions will be taken for us as the staff that will be closest to these situations? How do we handle students that are running away or having social emotional meltdowns? We tie an average of 37 shoes a day and zip twice as many coats. How do we do that with new safety requirements? How do we physically and emotionally support students with walking, touching, speaking, eye contact, fidgeting from a 6-foot distance in a mask? Will we have training on all the new approaches to handling this type of behavior and new instruction? This is what we do every day, and we do it with love, affection, and connection. Now, all of the qualities that make us the caring team of instructional assistants we are is exactly what we cannot and should not be doing because it could cost us our life or the life of our students. We understand the desires to have children return to in-person learning for various and very valid reasons, but the truth of the matter is we aren't ready. We aren't ready as a nation, and we aren't ready as a state. The only safe option would be to have online instruction for the beginning of the year. Other schools and districts have already recognized this and made this decision, and we implore District 57 to follow their leads. Please allow us to support our students remotely until COVID-19 is truly under control. Please give us the resources to provide quality remote education until this pandemic is under control. Please make sure you utilize the talents and resources of every instructional assistant through remote learning to give our students the quality education they can receive. And instructional assistants in District 57, our number one concern is safety of our students, colleagues, and community members. It's completely unfair that you are in this impossible position, but the unfortunate reality is that you have an obligation to protect the health and safety of our district's children, staff, and residents. That's what we do every day on our job. Dr. Autumn Miller and the Board of Education, I'd like to first thank the board for their thoughtful questions last week and determination to help us find a clear and safe plan for the staff and students. Thank you for being open to hearing from the community as well. I would feel more comfortable remaining anonymous. It is heartbreaking that teachers are being asked to choose between their jobs and safety. It is heartbreaking that I wouldn't feel safe seeing my own parents if I am forced to teach in person in a month. As a district, we seem to be thinking about all the right things except for safety. We care about the trauma to the students. We care about giving the best possible education, and we care about the needs of our families. If we really look into what in-person school would look like and feel like, we would clearly see this is not what is best for our community. As a teacher in D57, I am urging us to roll out fully remote learning and spend the rest of our precious time preparing a robust remote learning curriculum with our teams. Think about this in terms of these values: emotional trauma, providing the best education, and of course, safety. The safety restrictions set forth in in-person instruction and the potential illness risks from trying to go back before the virus is mitigated will be traumatic to children. Going back to school in person will not be social, even a hybrid situation. Students would feel shocked and uncomfortable being told they cannot congregate, work in partners or small groups, or move about the space freely. Everyone is on edge, and even if we are trying to stay positive, there will be a negative stigma associated with a simple cough or sneeze. It's difficult to hear your teacher's lesson through the his or her mask and all of that distance, and that everyone can ask to sit near the front. There are no longer small groups or science experiments. Already, this has to be more traumatic than staying home. Now imagine that anyone does get sick. It could be a fellow student, a family member, a teacher. Do not forget the possibility that someone in our community can die from this. Again, this has to be more traumatic than staying home. 2, in remote setting, the best education practices are possible. In our new reality, children no longer learn better physically in the classroom. In a remote learning setting, zero instruction time would be sacrificed. Tending to any misbehaviors, mass redirection, mask breaks, disinfection, waiting in socially distant lines to use the restroom or wash your hands or grab a material needed. There would be no lost instruction due to longer passing periods or longer arrival and dismissal practices. Zoom allows for my students to hear me, discuss feedback together, and see my smiling face. They can feel my excitement about what we are learning and doing. Most best practices, such as student collaboration, could actually be adapted to remote learning, while almost none of them could be adapted to in-person learning. Take fear out of the equation and you will get better instruction and deeper learning. There may be large learning gaps between the two groupings. If given the choice between remote and in-person learning, and the group who I believe would suffer the most is the group attempting class in person. Keep the prepared class list together by having the entire school begin safely and remotely. This provides the most optimal transition back to school when it is safe, rather than switching classes and teachers each grading period. Having the class dynamic change like that causes several other problems for everyone involved. 3, finally, safety. There is nothing safe about bringing students and staff into the school at this time. There is no written plans for teachers to follow to keep themselves safe and to keep our students safe. If just one student or staff member unknowingly brings in the virus, it will spread like wildfire. The added risk that we are asking special teachers, SOAR and SPED teachers, counselors, nurses, enrichment and intervention staff, and other staff to take it is exponentially dangerous, and there are no real plans in place for any of these. On top of teaching, we are being trained for symptom monitoring. As a teacher, I have always adapted to the many roles that I take on throughout the day. Over the past few years, with the rise of anxiety in young children, the need for me to become a counselor has been added. I do not feel properly trained to understand the onset of an illness while teaching through my mask and shield from across the room. In our classrooms, there is no space for 6 feet of distance, let alone 2 to 3 feet. For myself and for many others, our own underlying health presents an extra layer of fear. I believe that remote learning is the best possible situation for our students, their families, the staff, and their families. It is the only safe plan. Parents are being given the choice. Teachers are only allowed to prove a medical need and give a preference in case enough parents opt for remote learning. If the numbers are not equal, teachers will be placed in an unsafe position they are uncomfortable fulfilling. Most importantly, we need to do this as a district in full. If parents are given choices to opt one way or another for grading periods at a time, instruction will be affected as the dynamic in those classrooms change. Not one staff member should be forced to work inside a school until our county reports no cases of COVID-19 for at least 14 days. We are ready and eager to get back to teaching and working with our students, but we are not eager to get back into an unsafe classroom. Thanks for your consideration and time. Next is a Robert Taylor. I am a parent of two in District 57 and would like to provide you with positive feedback from last week's readiness presentation. I agree with your decision to move forward with either in-person or remote option. You conducted a thorough survey to solicit a wide spectrum of feedback from parents. You made decisions based on that information. I encourage you to stand by the survey results and the decision to provide in-person or remote options, which would allow the district to focus on its available resources and provide a positive learning experience for our children in the 2020-2021 school year. I recognize the ongoing debates on social media regarding the benefits of providing a hybrid approach. On this point, I encourage you to trust the data and information received through the surveys, which present a much deeper and diverse set of feedback. Please consider this as you move forward. Finally, I'm highly encouraged by the financial position of our district and the ability of the district to fund the additional resources which will be needed to provide a safe in-person classroom experience. The upcoming year will require budgeting for an unknown set of variable expenses, and I'm confident that the district is prepared to handle them. Please accept my thanks for ensuring the district is in a sound financial position. I wish you both the best of luck tomorrow night, and I hope that this message is a helpful one. Next up is Andrew Bazula. Wanted to know, would enrichment math and reading classes be offered at Lions Park for in-person remote learning or now possibly hybrid options? Will the enrichment teacher continue to be teaching the fifth grade enrichment? Their decision between in-person, remote, or hybrid options is almost entirely based on whether or not my daughter can continue to be taught by the enrichment teacher. Currently, children are pulled from their home classrooms and walked to the classroom. This undermines the idea of keeping children in the same classroom with the same group of kids. One option of addressing this issue is to assign enrichment kids to one home classroom at each grade level and have the enrichment teacher travel to those classes for the enrichment periods. In last week's board meeting, we learned that remote learning will be comparable to in-person learning. Why will these two, now possibly three learning modes, not be the same? Will they follow the same curriculum? Will assignments, homeworks, books, etc. be the same? Will all learning modes offered in-person, remote learning, and possibly hybrid be staffed by current teachers? If Governor Pritzker closes schools again, as he did in March, will all instruction transition to the currently planned remote learning option? Could you please walk through a typical remote learning day and week? How much time is allocated to synchronized learning? How much to asynchronous? I can't even speak anymore, sorry. How much time do kids work on their own? How is feedback from teachers provided for remote learners? And how will quizzes and tests be conducted? Next up is Holly Balk and Lori Pettyjohn. Dear 57 board members and administrators, first, we would like to thank you for all the time and consideration you have taken during this unprecedented time to plan for the upcoming school year. As two concerned families with five young children among us, we have been listening to all the information shared through the board meetings and the community about the potential plans for the upcoming school year. It saddens us that the health and safety of teachers, staff, and students and their families has not been supported in the reopening plans that have been discussed so far. While we understand that no plan will satisfy every family, as two families with two full-time working parents, we feel strongly that a return to remote learning full-time for the upcoming school year is the best way to keep everyone safe. Any in-person instruction puts students and adult lives at risk. Are we concerned about our children's social and emotional well-being? Yes, of course, but our priority is their health and safety. If any in-person instruction is provided, teachers and staff will not be spending quality time educating. Instead, they will be continuously interrupted by cleaning, managing social distancing, and reminding students to keep or put their masks on correctly. How can we expect teachers to do all of this on top of worrying about their own health and safety? Students will not be able to socialize during in-person instruction because group work is not an option. As a result, in-person instruction will essentially become the same as the instruction that can be delivered remotely. Should you choose to a full remote learning plan for the upcoming school year, we know that District 57 teachers and staff will be able to deliver a better remote learning experience than they did in the spring, because they will have the time to plan and to expect the unexpected. In closing, when it's time to make a final decision on what plan is going to be adopted for District 57 for the upcoming school year, please make sure that you prioritize the health and safety of students, staff, teachers, and their families first. And the last one is from Karen and Mark Pearson. We are uncomfortable with the two choices proposed for the new school year. We feel that they are on both ends of the spectrum. We think that there are students whose parents will definitely find a fit for them at these two ends of the spectrum, but not for the vast majority of families. We don't think either choice is acceptable in the current situation. Lincoln is incredibly overcrowded. We feel like 80% of parents are torturing themselves with this impossible decision to send the students back full-time to an overcrowded building with potential COVID risk exposure, or keep them home and sideline their mental health, social growth, and maybe even their education. Please consider a hybrid plan that will help reduce the capacity inside Lincoln. District 57's plans need to make sense for the vast majority of us to feel more confident in our decision. Please consider reducing the capacity at Lincoln with your plans and or adding a hybrid option. Thank you very much. Okay. And with that, I thank everybody that sent theirs in, and I try to pull just a little bit from everybody. And of course, the ones that didn't get on that, I read those ones. I'm going to hand this over to Elaine to put the presentation forward.
Good evening. As you know, we're reconvening tonight to further discuss options for the coming school year. The readiness plan we presented last week would give parents the choice between full in-person learning or remote learning. After conducting in-depth research into many different approaches and analyzing the stakeholder feedback we received up to that point, we felt at the time that this was the best option for District 57. In addition, the plan we presented last week is in line with many back-to-school plans in the area, including all the districts that feed into District 214 and 211 high schools. However, the situation has continued to evolve. We've read hundreds of emails from staff and parents, and we've been communicating with our surrounding districts, some of whom are considering making changes to their plans for in-person learning. In addition, we're continuing to look at the public health situation in our area and in the state. And of course, we want to respond to the board's request to provide a clear understanding of all options. Considering all this, and in an effort to be as flexible and responsive as possible, this evening we will present four additional options for consideration, and we will alter our recommendation. We will be asking the board to provide clear direction at the end of this meeting so that we can continue preparing for the start of school, which is in just 4 weeks. We will present the merits and challenges of each option, but ultimately, I must tell you that it is our opinion that remote learning is the safest and most sustainable option at this time. This is partly due to our recent conversations with the unions and the task force, as well as the many staff letters we have received. It is very clear that many staff members feel that starting the school year with remote learning is the best and only option from a safety perspective. Based on what we've heard from them, we are concerned that we will not have enough staff to sustain in-person learning or even a hybrid model. Staff members have, understandably, raised concerns about their own safety, as well as the disruption that could occur if a teacher is forced to quarantine or a sub must teach a class for the long term, or even worse, if there are no subs available. We agree that there are many advantages to starting the school year with a remote learning scenario. It eliminates the risk of a major health crisis in the first couple months. It gives us the opportunity to implement an across-the-board, robust online program that mirrors the regular school day, including enrichment and intervention. And it enables us to prepare for a safe return to in-person learning, possibly in October or as soon as possible. Also, it's important to note that we are seeing increasing numbers of districts moving to this approach over the past several days, including District 46 and Stevenson and Evanston Township High Schools. We expect more to follow suit. However, I assure you we have thoroughly explored several different options, and tonight we will outline in detail what each one would look like so you can have a clear picture and make a well-informed recommendation. And now at this time, I would like to introduce MPA co-presidents Elizabeth Strasek and Loretta Rose, and from the MPSPA, President Pauline Fotopoulos and Vice President Ellen Lonergan. They have statements they'd like to read to the board. But Elizabeth, if you would go first, and then Pauline, if you would follow after.
Thank you, Dr. Allmiller. I am reading this letter composed by Loretta and myself this evening as representatives of the Mount Prospect Education Association. We have the fortunate position of not only representing this excellent group of educators, but we are also community members and parents of children who are alumni of District 57 as well. Their teachers and the staff in our building are highly qualified educators. We are proud to call them our children's former teachers, our colleagues, and our friends. We feel it's important to give you that short background so that you understand when we write this letter, we have many different perspectives through which we view the situation we find ourselves in today. We thank you for asking the district to reconsider better, safer options for our educators and our students. A great deal of work has been done to look at in-person, hybrid, and remote learning options. Each option has positives and negatives, but none of the current options resemble school in a pre-COVID world. That's an important lens through which to view the choice before you this evening. In-person is not back to normal, hybrid is not back to normal, and remote is not back to normal. With all of that in mind, we urge you, on behalf of our members, our students, and our community, to select remote learning to begin the 2020-21 school year as the safest and best of the three delivery models in front of you tonight. As we all meet virtually this evening for our safety, rather than gather in the Fairview Multipurpose Room, we implore you to extend the same safety precautions to our MPEA members, MPESPA members, and our students until it is once again safe. Even as the safety protocols have been developed, we cannot guarantee a safe teaching and learning environment for all involved while being present in the buildings. In a recent survey of our members, 2/3 of them preferred remote learning to begin the school year. We are only asking to be kept safe as COVID numbers rise. Keep us safe so we can educate our students and do our jobs. Although a difficult decision, we feel it's in the best interest to start the school year in a remote learning model and move to a hybrid model after the science and tracking shows that it is safe. Remote learning will not look like it did in the spring. If you approve the recommendation for remote learning and teaching tonight, we will have the time to prepare and move forward with fidelity and rigor. We will not be bound by the state regarding grades or limiting new material. We can move forward with the local standards to which our community is accustomed. By choosing to open schools with remote learning, we will be providing an equitable learning environment for all. Although schools will look different, we are confident this is the best course moving forward. Schools will not be closed. The buildings will be. Education will still happen. We hope District 57 is seen as a leader in the movement toward prioritizing both staff and students by starting the year remotely. Many local school districts and school boards are making this decision with the realization it's the best course of action. We understand the need to be sensitive to the stakeholders. However, we simply cannot support a scenario that puts the lives of our educators, students, and families at risk. We ask you make the right decision tonight so we can finalize the details of the plans set before you this evening. Respectfully, myself and Loretta Rose as representatives of the MPEA.
Thank you, Elizabeth. And now, Feline.
Thank you, Dr. Allmiller, administration, and board members for this opportunity to join the panel. Many of the viewers may be wondering about my inclusion tonight. I am Feline Fotopoulos, president of the Mount Prospect Education Support Professionals Association, also known by the acronym MPESPA. All education support professionals, ESP, are represented by MPESPA. Also on the panel is Ellen Lonergan, vice president of MPESPA. We both appreciate being invited to the board meeting. Now, a little bit more about me. I have been an ESP since 1998 as an instructional assistant at Lyons Park. I was working when two very unexpected incidents occurred. The first was near the end of the school day when a powerful thunderstorm came through Mount Prospect, along with a microburst that caused power outages and many fallen trees. Staff and students moved into the hallways. Some students cried, and many were visibly frightened, understandably so. The second, more disconcerting incident was a Lyons Park lockdown just as students were arriving for school. This was not a drill. The police received a report and were on school grounds and inside the building until they determined that the lockdown order could be rescinded. Both of these incidents demonstrated the dedication of our staff to the safety and well-being of the students. I witnessed and participated in many of the selfless actions taken by staff to protect and reassure the students. Now, we are experiencing the most unexpected incident of our lives. There are so many unknowns about COVID-19. there is evidence that anyone could be an asymptomatic carrier. The thought that I could unintentionally infect someone, cause suffering, and potentially cause a death is very discomforting for me. If I were to die from the virus, it could be said, at least she had 64 years to live. The same would not be true of, and I am making an educated estimate, possibly one administrator, the entire board, and less than 12 members of MPEA and MPESPA combined. There is only one group young enough to know with certainty, and that is every student in our district. Our governor has said many times, there is no livelihood without a life. I would add that there is no future, no hope, and no life without a life. I am using this opportunity to implore the board, and I cannot stress this enough, please make the safety of staff and students your number one priority. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Feline. And now at this time, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Dr. Mary Gore. She'll take us through the options.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to be back with you tonight. As was shared earlier, we really do appreciate this opportunity to come back before you, share the learning that we have engaged in the last 7 days, and the journey really that we have taken as a result of this opportunity to provide new thinking for consideration of this Board of Education. And it's worth repeating that there has been a really massive collaborative effort among the administrative team, the leadership from both unions, and also from our staff on the task force. The news that there would be an opportunity to reflect on our recommendations was met with great rejoicing in all cases, that this allowed for us to get this right. And we really saw this as an opportunity to reflect the fact that we truly are a responsive group of people. We don't feel ashamed to come before and provide a new version because we think that's reflective of our commitment to learning and adjusting and adapting to the needs of our stakeholders. So we're really encouraged about this opportunity. Tonight, we are going to provide an overview of 5 choices to the board to consider. And right now, just for ease of organization, to help frame the conversation that will follow, I want to quickly go through the 5 choices, which will be provided in more detail in this presentation. The first option was the option presented last Thursday, where we asked parents to make a decision. Would they like a full in-person option for their child, or would they like a full remote learning option for their child? As outlined last week, we believe that these two models provide important choices for families. We understand that there is quite a continuum of preferences based on the feedback data, focus group data, and other feedback channels that we engaged in throughout the summer. And we do think there are many positives to this model, which we'll go into shortly. But we also recognize there are many negatives to this model. As described earlier, we do recognize that the safety protocols available in a full in-person model are quite limited. We certainly feel that we can meet the standards laid out by Illinois State Board of Education and Illinois Department of Public Health. However, we certainly in some places are not meeting the full extent. It's permissible, as we laid out for the board. We're within legal protection, we believe. However, we're not at the full limits of what could be provided from a safety perspective, and we'll talk more about that. The second option we'll spend time looking at and presenting for your consideration is keeping the choices for our elementary students and our parents of those students between a full in-person or a full remote learning option, but to consider having different choices for Lincoln. And that would be starting the year with a full remote learning for all students at Lincoln Middle School, and considering a phasing in hybrid learning model later in the fall. We will talk about the date of October 19th, but you'll see here that that's the tentative target date that we think would be a safe one for us to shoot for and plan around, which corresponds to the end of the first quarter, and it's a reasonable timeline, we think, and we'll go into the specifics of that in the presentation as well. The reason why we are separating a recommendation option for Lincoln and the elementary schools is because we do understand that Lincoln has its very significant challenges when we look at re-engaging in in-person learning. Lincoln has the largest number of students. It has very constricting building space limitations as an older building. There's the most staff at Lincoln, and there's quite complexity in looking at the range of instructional pathways for the sixth, seventh, and eighth grade students. And so there are many limitations to the way that we can safely re-engage while also maintaining the quality programming that we know we can offer in normal circumstance. And so we do believe that there is a rationale to consider a full remote start for Lincoln. The third option we will be talking about and ultimately recommending is a full remote learning start for all students in District 57 in elementary school in Lincoln with a phased in hybrid learning model for October 19th. Now, I want to back up slightly. I said all, of course, but really the vast majority is what I should have said. We do think there are small groups of children in District 57 who need an in-person learning opportunity, and we would engage in conversations to identify exactly who that would be, but we believe some students who have special education services with a significant amount of services in their individual education plan would benefit from an opportunity to access some in-person learning opportunities and in-person therapy. We do believe that there should be a priority to emergent bilingual students for whom English is not their first language. And we think that there will be a systematic way to identify services while also maintaining safety standards. We lastly think that our students who receive preschool education through our special education program, Circle of Friends, we do think that it would be beneficial to offer opportunities for in-person learning. And so we'll talk a bit more about that, but I do want to clarify that when we say full remote learning, in fact, it's more so about 98% full remote learning. And we do believe there's a reason and a rationale to provide about 2% or so of our families an opportunity for some in-learning experiences. Now, we do think that there is a rationale, again, to looking at October 19th as a reasonable time to set our goal and target for to re-engage. But we believe that it should be so when we have a hybrid learning model identified. And so in this presentation, we will take time and go through several different hybrid learning models for both elementary school and middle school so that the board can be informed of what we believe to be possibilities in these areas. And we do think that there would be a reasonable plan for option three to get engagement and feedback data from our staff and our families as well. Option four, which we'll talk about tonight as well, is providing parents with an option between a hybrid learning start or a full remote learning start for elementary school. And for Lincoln, we still maintain that a full remote learning model would be ideal, and that would maintain as the previous option an October tentative target date to re-engage in person at Lincoln. And lastly, we will provide the board with information to consider option five, which would be giving all parents in District 57 the choice between a hybrid learning model to start the year or a full remote learning model to start the year. And so that's just an overview. And now we'll go a little bit further. So we're going to provide some comparison between these learning models, and we want to recognize that all of this falls within this context of phase four within the Restore Illinois framework. We can't say enough that when we're talking about full school in-person learning, we want to stress that in the context of this presentation, we are not talking about pre-COVID experiences in our schools. And Elizabeth mentioned that in her speech. But it's important for all of us because we find ourselves saying things in discussions and collaborations, and sometimes people want to make sure we're not saying anything about what we believe about school in its fullness and all that it can offer. We're talking within the limits of the world that we're in right now, and that is a phase four reality. And so what we're going to discuss tonight is simply and these different models within the reality we find ourselves. First, we're going to talk about what full in-person learning will look like with lunch. Again, this is the plan consistent with what was described last Thursday night. And this is also reflective of the opportunity for parents to make this selection in the model that we currently are offering families in our survey. We do believe there are pros. We wouldn't have brought this to the Board of Education if we didn't believe that to be true. Particularly, we recognize that kids have not been in school since March, and being back in school is really important and a good place for kids to be learning, engaging with peers, having their teachers, their new teachers of this school year, and you know, all these networks of support and love that schools offer students. It's so wonderful that we're in a community where kids have loving, nurturing homes like Mount Prospect, but we know that there's value for kids to have these identities outside their homes. And so many families in our focus groups and our staff alike long for the magic that happens in in-person school. And we believe that there can be something valuable about that, even with wearing masks, even with desks facing forward, even with spaces and some of those formal appearances of a 1950s education when we think of it, we do still know that we'll be able to maintain the love and care and quality of instruction, even despite those scenarios. We think that there'll be great social emotional benefits for children to have in-person experiences with their educators and their peers. And of course, for families, it's a nice consistent schedule that allows for you to know that, you know, if you're signing your child up for a full-time in-person, there's reason to hope that you will have kind of a consistent knowledge of their schedule that week. But we do want to mention, though we list that in the pro, we will get to later why that's kind of with an asterisk, because we think with all of the possibilities of COVID and exposure that we know is happening even in the summer months, we want to caution that though it appears to be a consistent schedule, we don't think that it will in fact be quite as consistent as we all long it to be. Because with quarantining and responsible safety practices that we believe our staff and our communities and families would engage in, there's going to be a lot of long-term absences that we'd need to contend with in any in-person model. Let's look at the cons of the full in-person model. Again, this is what we described last week, but I don't think we quite went into the cons and the potential risks of this model quite as much as we should have, and so here we are. There would be mask-free times during the day. As we know, when students eat lunch, they're taking off their masks, and that is provided in the ISBE IDPH guidance. So that's, you know, in accordance with that guidance. However, there's no denying that we don't want to promote mask-free times in our buildings. And yet every day during those periods, that would be the case. Many parents and staff have contacted us with concerns and questions about this and recommended suggestions such as tents and utilizing all available spaces. And the good news is that we're working on that and trying to exhaust possibilities like those, but we actually won't be able to make those guarantees for families in District 57 that all students, when they don't have a mask on, will be eating outside or in a tent or in a larger space in a classroom, simply because we can't guarantee that and we wouldn't guarantee something we couldn't. And if it's a rainy day and there aren't enough spaces for outdoor eating, then students will be eating in their classrooms without masks. And so that's a risk that we think we need to address. 6 feet of social distancing is not achievable in the majority of instances in this model. We know this, we talked about this to the board last week. Again, IDPH and ISBE has used terminology, do the best you can. It's not a secret, or many school districts that have a reopening plan are also acknowledging that we don't have the ability and the space and the staff to provide more than 6 feet of social distancing in the vast majority. We believe that there will be significant staffing challenges due to the fact that full-time remote learning is running simultaneously to this model. As we know, we have a survey that's out right now. About 65% of families in each grade level have not replied to that survey. And we believe that is because they're probably, some of them are not satisfied with the choices, as we heard from the comments. We believe some are needing more reassurances about what in-person learning will look like. And we believe some are needing more reassurances about remote learning, what remote learning would look like. And so tonight's presentation is really aimed at trying to address all of those hypotheses that we have about that, about 65% for each grade level. But that's quite significant. And so it makes it difficult for us to speculate what staffing models would look like. And so we haven't made guarantees to families who have reached out to us about programming, enrichment, and interventions, simply because we think it would be irresponsible to make those assurances. We need to be responsive to the staffing plans that are based on student enrollment numbers. And so we do want to forecast that we have reasonable concern about how we can make guarantees to the Board of Education that we can run all of our programming and all of the comprehensive options for students, both who need extra support and who need to be pushed further. We just want to be really realistic when we look at our models. We think that it's worth noting there will be significant instructional time lost due to increased safety procedures. Certainly, safety is the priority, but we need to do the math on the number of minutes it takes for a room full of first graders to wash their hands. It takes a very long time. So it adds up when you look at a school day, and when you look at a week, and when you look at a month. I mean, that does eat away at the quality of learning and teaching time. And touched on a bit, but it's worth us to consider that even if we can provide our excellent programs, we really can't guarantee that there won't be long-term staff absences due to responsible quarantine or, God forbid, exposure to COVID, where they are not well and they're not able to teach remotely. In those cases, we think we would have a crisis in the way that we could viably staff with substitute teachers and make sure that there could be a continuation of learning that's happening in those situations. And so that's kind of the overview for that model. Oops. All right, so now we're gonna do an overview of hybrid models, but then we're gonna go more into specifics about different types of hybrid models. But let's start with the basics. When we talk about hybrid models, essentially we're talking about modifying our school day to accommodate greater levels of social distancing and still have a support for students' social emotional wellness and an opportunity for personalized teacher instruction in person. Hybrid learning has a variety of different techniques because you have a portion of students in-person learning and a portion of students at home learning, there needs to be a variety of different approaches. So there will be some independent work that might come in the form of packets. There will be virtual learning experiences that will be live and also pre-recorded. There will be small group learning opportunities for students and regular interaction with teachers and support personnel as needed. We will need increased arrival and dismissal times due to the different models that we'll describe next. And students will still have masks if they ride the bus and have assigned seats on the bus. The pros of hybrid models in general are that they have less people in the classroom at once. And so you do achieve 6 feet of social distancing in nearly every case. It's also a nice opportunity for students to still get in-person instruction. we recognize that, you know, there's a desire for kids to be in school. And as some of the community comments mentioned from parents, they felt that in the continuum of full remote and full in person, those are the ends of the continuums, but they wanted a mix of something. And so hybrid would potentially offer that. There are cons to hybrid models, and we'll talk specifically about the hybrid models we're going to get into, but they are difficult to sustain due to staff absences and quarantining. We believe that less people in a space, it's logical to understand that that's safer and that there's less exposure at one time. But from what we know about studying this virus is that the germs linger. And so if in certain hybrid models, you're not eliminating the transfer of germs between people. And so I think we need to be honest that hybrid may be better, but it doesn't take away risk. There would also be in many cases an increased cost for busing. We still think there will be a challenge to completely guarantee enrichment and intervention services due to the fact that even though a hybrid model could be offered, we believe that there will be full-time remote learning desires for our parent community as so long as we are in phase four. And so for that reason, a hybrid model is almost dividing our services into three. You've got students in person, you've got students remote, and then you have students who are full-time remote. And so from a staffing perspective, that's pretty complicated for us to give assurances at this place that wouldn't have implications on programs. And we really believe that this hybrid model, though there are benefits, we believe that there are significant challenges in the way that staff are now needing to have responsibility for students in their classrooms and students at home learning. And it was mentioned earlier that there's a big equity piece, but we also think it's a significant challenge for our staff members to contend with in a limited amount of time. And we also understand that it's considered a change of working condition and therefore needs to be bargained. And so we do understand that that's an important aspect of this conversation for the board to consider in any hybrid model. So let's look at a couple different hybrids for elementary right now. The first we're going to look at is the one that we think is the safest model, and that would be half days for elementary. We use the terms cohorts, and so as we'll get into, you'll get to see some model week schedules for this example. But basically, you're taking a class of students and you're dividing it into an A cohort and a B cohort. And the A cohort students would always attend in the morning, and the B cohort students would always attend in the afternoon in this model. Students wouldn't eat snack at school, they wouldn't have lunch at school or recess at school. For elementary, we would prioritize math, reading, and writing during the in-person portion of the schedule, and specials would occur during remote learning, as well as other experiences with a lot of kind of independent and reinforcement work, where children would be kind of continuing the learning of science and social studies with some guidance, but not with a live teacher, because that teacher would be teaching the other half of the group. There would be a combination of synchronous, which would be live, or asynchronous instructional models, which means recorded. And this would allow for built-in and plan and collaborative time for staff, which is so important right now, because teachers, though they've had the summer and many have really devoted a lot of their independent time to studying, there's going to be still this learning curve for staff to contend with that certainly we'll speak to in this presentation. But we want to make sure there's embedded collaborative time for teachers. The pros to this model is that we do achieve 6 feet of social distancing in our elementary classrooms because there's less students in the room. We have no mask-free times throughout the day, with the exception of any child who receives a medical exemption. And core subjects are taught in person, so we think that's really valuable. But there are cons. It is difficult to sustain this because this is still an in-person model, and any in-person model is going to have absences and quarantining and changes to the plan, and we think that that's a huge stress to the system in general. There will be significant increases in costs for bus routes in this model because you're essentially doubling your buses. And we still believe that this would require, result in a challenge to maintain staff, to maintain enrichment and intervention services. Again, that's because the teachers are all going to be responsible for teaching students in person, students remotely, and we're going to have students who are just electing remote. And so it's going to be really challenging to make sure we have viable staffing for that model. Let's look at an example of what that would look like. This is a sample, so full disclaimer, don't print this out if you're at home and put this, don't laminate this yet, but this is something we thought would be helpful to make sure people understand what this would look like for different grade levels. So for our circle of friends, preschoolers and our kindergartners, because they're half day in their normal model, we essentially modified their half day hybrid schedule so that you can see on Mondays, all kindergarten students would be remote with their teacher. Circle of Friends students do not attend Monday, so this really just applies for kindergartners. On Tuesday, half of a morning kindergarten or half of a morning preschool class would attend in person, and half of the class would attend remotely. And then in the afternoon, the same thing would follow, and essentially they would alternate Tuesdays, Thursdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And you can see at the bottom notes too, that we've basically captured what I mentioned earlier as the cohort C, which would be students in these different areas who would likely qualify for more services or more in-person time than is described here. And so that would be something that we would make sure to work with individual families and identify what that would look like. Here's a sample elementary half-day hybrid schedule. You'll see a slight modification of hours, and this is really because these are not hypothetical hours. These are actual viable hours that Adam Preece has worked very closely with for student to make sure that this could actually run this way. So you would notice on Mondays, all cohorts A and B would be remote. That would be a day for some small group work, check-in time, potentially intervention support, and also some teacher plan time on Mondays. Tuesday, you would see that cohort A, starting Tuesday through Friday, cohort A is always in person in the morning, and in the afternoon, they are always remote. And then it's a switch with B. So B is always in person in the afternoons and always remote in the morning. Here's a different type of elementary hybrid option that we'll talk about next. So this would be, instead of half days, this would be full days, and specifically two full days in a row. And so cohorts A and B, remote learning would be on Monday still, but Tuesday and Wednesday, cohort A would be in person, cohort B would be remote learning. And Thursday and Friday, they would switch. Cohort B would be in person and cohort A would be remote learning. There would be deep cleaning and disinfection of all classroom spaces between those cohort groups. So that would be on Wednesday and Friday evenings. The pros are quite similar to the hybrid before. You still have less people in the classroom at once, which achieves 6 feet of social distancing in the vast majority of cases. There's more continuous learning options. If you know you have your students for 2 days, you have more options and your flexibility as a teacher, especially at elementary school, where you can really differentiate your planning and do more, I think, instructionally in the time that's afforded to you. But in a full day model, we return to having periods of time where students are not wearing masks every day. And that, again, goes back to increased risk. We still think it's difficult to sustain because, again, this is still an in-person model with lots of exposure. There's longer gaps of time for that remote learning group, so it's fun and great when your kids are in the building, and that's great, but for the people who are remote, that now becomes 2 days, and that's a hardship for learning and also for families. And we still believe it's a staffing challenge because we're still in a situation where we're offering essentially 3 programs. Now, it's possible, I want to address people at home or the board may be thinking, wouldn't the families for whose students are remote learning full-time just join in the remote groups? It's possible, but we fear that that's not quite the best experience for a remote learning full-time student to just be joining in a remote cohort when these students would have days with a teacher in person. It doesn't quite individualize the model to be responsive to someone that's full-time remote. We think that's not quite ideal, but it's possible. So it's something that we wouldn't take off the off the table of a possibility, but it's not an ideal remote learning model. So here's an example of what early childhood and kindergartens, 2 days per week of a hybrid schedule would look like. Mondays are full remote for kindergarten. Preschool doesn't attend Mondays. Tuesdays and Wednesdays, you'll see that half of the morning class would be in person, half would be remote, and they would switch on Thursdays and Fridays. All right, here's an elementary model of what this would look like. Monday would be full remote for all students, and basically cohort A would be in person Tuesday and Wednesday all day, and they would be remote Thursday and Friday when B was in person. And the last elementary hybrid model we'll look at tonight is a full week at a time of learning. Same concept, but just longer gaps of time. Cohort A is full in person for a week, and cohort B is remote learning for that first week, and in week two, they switch. Deep cleaning and disinfection would happen at the end of a period of time before the next cohort switches. Many of the same pros, many of the same cons, but the things that are different are that the pro is that you get a full week of school. And so we think that's really wonderful. We think from an instructional standpoint, the teacher has a lot of latitude in the way that they can design instruction and meet the needs of students while they're there. However, that's still a week at a time that students would be home. And we do think that's difficult for our elementary students to not, you know, have that access to their teacher for that period of time. And that full attention that is happening when you're in person. We still think this presents, I'm kind of repeating myself, but it still has the same challenges of exposure, safety risks, unpredictable absences that, you know, won't be avoidable, we think. So this is a challenge. But here's an example of what that would look like. So I'm sure you get the idea, the full week for cohort A, and then they have a full week of remote in week two, while B is having their in-person. Here's what elementary would look like. Same concept. All right, well now let's switch gears to three different Lincoln hybrid models. And our Lincoln expert is Paul Siminski. And so I am going to hand it over to Paul to talk about Lincoln.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for having us as a part of the presentation. So Lincoln's logistics, obviously everybody knows that middle school logistics are more challenging as a whole than some of the elementary ones. Part of it is the nature of middle school, the transition from classes. We have more levels, we have more students, so our class sizes are going to be larger. So some of those things right off the bat will create a more substantial logistical challenge when you're trying to do something that naturally is not a part of what it is that we typically do. So it's a little bit of a square peg and round hole situation. But right off the top, you notice the major difference is Lincoln is split into three cohorts. And I wrote possibly two because it depends on how many students we have full remote. But live, when we average class sizes 27 to 31, 32 at times, the challenge is that we're trying to get to a number of between 10 and 12, and splitting them in half just doesn't do it. So if we are legitimately looking at an opportunity for social distancing, we need those numbers smaller. So we are looking at 3, which right off the bat is a challenge because you notice the elementary models are in 2. So that means that Lincoln schedules will be operating independently of the elementaries. So when you look at the common families, families in multiple schools, there will be those challenges as far as like sometimes the students are at Lincoln and may not be at their elementaries at that time. So we're looking at that AM PM split as well. If you take a look at the time, so 7:30 to 11 and about noon to 2:50. And it does, thank you, Mary, for letting families know, don't print this off and laminate it yet, but this is our work in progress as far as what it is that logistically can work. So the hybrid A day, the schedule changes daily from AM periods to PM periods. When I get to an example, I'll be able to talk a little bit more about that. But the idea is that AM is dedicated to that in-person instruction for one of those 3 cohorts. And then the PM, you would pick up your other 2 cohorts during the PM for those periods. So students would progress together as a cohort, and that would help minimize the amount of instruction lost or missed between students in the same class per se. So some of the pros, elimination of lunch. Lunch is a substantial logistical challenge at Lincoln, not only because of the smaller building, the larger class sizes, but just finding a place to have them. Now, if we have outside and we're able to utilize outside, that's great. But elimination of lunch is what it is that we're focused on for the hybrid too, to help with some of those safety concerns that we were talking about. We are looking at a cohort model. So I had parents and even board members ask about like what is a typical Lincoln day look like if we were in person or hybrid. We are looking at a cohort model. So what that means is we will try to lock in a group of students into a classroom, and then we would have teachers rotate into those classes. Still to be determined how it is that we set that up, but right now we're looking at math levels, to have students by their math level actually stay put in their cohort and have teachers travel to them. So part of the benefit is that we don't have the hallways, we don't have the congregation in the hallways, we don't have a grade level of students out in the hallways, even a third of them. A third of the school is gonna be about 270, 260, 270, so we would eliminate passing periods and have teachers travel that way. The other pro is if we have a student that needs to move to a remote setting, whether it's because of a quarantine, God forbid an illness or something like that, we are able to maintain their schedule and their teacher because the teacher is offering those remote learning opportunities in the PM. And again, I'll go over some of those examples. And the typical periods are maintained. So we do have exposure to all of the classes, and the schedule should mirror the way it typically does. One of the major cons right off the bat when we talk about a cohort model, not all students in accelerated math have accelerated ELA. Or not all the students in a standard math class have standard ELA. So part of the challenge right off the top is that if we have students by cohort, we would most likely not be leveling by ELA. And the reason is that if we are pulling students out and reassembling them in groups, kind of defeats the purpose of a cohort model. If we're looking to eliminate the amount of transitions, we would not then add in additional transitions on that. The other challenge is that, like as far as classrooms, like a science teacher wouldn't necessarily be teaching in their classroom, teaching science in their classroom, because again, they're kind of stay put in those classes. Another kind is the students essentially would have that teacher in person once a week. So as far as like a connection with the teacher, they would see them once a week, they would have them remotely twice a week, but it wouldn't necessarily be like an every day or every other day. So it essentially goes to 3 teacher connections a week if we were to go to hybrid. It is a rotating schedule, so that means that students would attend different days, and I'll be able to spell that out a little bit on the example when we get to it. Same logistical in-person issues are present as far as like keeping masks on, keeping that social distance. When Mary was talking about the fact that it does bring students together into one room, but if you're all facing forward with your masks on, without that collaboration, without that connection, without like we would be putting in structures in place to limit social social interaction. So it wouldn't just be like, hey, it's just like the old days, and all, the only difference is masks. We wouldn't have that congregation in the hallways. We wouldn't necessarily use lockers, you know, to try and avoid some of those things. And so it wouldn't be a normal situation. So those logistical things, those in-person logistical things are present. The other thing is curriculum pace. When we have pretty much every day, we're splitting into 2 days, essentially we would be chopping that curriculum time into 50% of what it is that we typically do. So if Mary goes to the first example here, I can talk a little bit more in detail about that. So if you take a look at Monday, cohort A would meet periods 1 through 5. That is in person. It is with the teachers rotating in. And the B and C people would be at home. They would be doing potentially independent activities at that time. So some of the enrichment things and things like that. But their teachers are currently teaching, so they would not necessarily be able to remote connect with students during the AM time. Now, in the PM time, that is the time to shine. That's their opportunity to be able to connect with the teacher and work with them so that A, B, and C are all receiving periods 1 through 5, a third of them in person, 2/3 of them on the outside. And so when A goes home, they have those independent activities there as well. So that would continue into Monday, Tuesday. You see the cohort A would be in person 1 through 5, 6 through 10 on Tuesday. We do have 10 periods in the day, so we would look to maintain that. And then it would switch to cohort B. They'd have back-to-back days. And then cohort C would be back-to-back days. In this case, it's Friday, and then it would be the following Monday that they would be in person for periods 6 through 10. So when I talk about a rotating schedule, if my child is, let's say, in cohort A, that means that they would be in person Monday and Tuesday this week, Tuesday and Wednesday the following week, Wednesday and Thursday the week after that. So you don't have the consistency of, hey, every Monday and Tuesday, I know the kids are coming in, so I can figure out my childcare or pick up or things like that. It would continually be rotating because we would be on a 3-day, essentially a 6-day rotation with only 5 days in the week to be able to do that. Broken down by periods for you to kind of get an idea of what those time frames look like. Again, nothing to be laminated, but gives you an idea of what it is. So we're looking at about 30, 35 minute periods to make it sustainable, to make it educationally viable to the best degree possible. When I say that the curriculum pacing is going to be a concern, we are spending Monday only going through periods 1 through 5, and then Tuesday going through periods 6 through 10. So what they would have had on Monday, they would have had a full 1 through 10. But here, because we need to chop it down, we are only going through 1 through 5 on Monday and then 6 through 10 on Tuesday. So it is a 50% cut as far as like working through the curriculum on that. We did add in a line here for cohort D when we talk about students that have special considerations where they do need more in person. They may be a very small population that may be attending a little bit more often depending on their need, but that doesn't necessarily affect the schedule on the whole. So going back to the original comment where I said that we're dividing by 3 because of the class sizes, potentially that could change to 2, but we have to plan for this because of the staffing and how tight the staffing is on that. Another option that we did is hybrid B, where we do it weekly. So I tried to look at the elementary, 1 week on, 1 week off. Once again, because we are splitting into 3 though, elementary, it does 1 week on, 1 week off. We would be doing 1 week on and 2 weeks off, which obviously poses some significant challenges on that. But essentially, the schedule changes weekly, so you get a little bit more consistency. You know how often, which week you're on, which week you're off, things like that. And the AM would be dedicated specifically to that in-person instruction for that one cohort all week long. And the PM would be for the kids that are not attending. So once again, that one cohort in the AM, and then the other two cohorts in the PM to try and, again, keep pace with students. So some of the pros, again, lunch is eliminated in this capacity. Same thing with the cohort model, so the exact same thing there. Students that do need to move to remote learning, again, get to keep the same schedule and the same teacher, which again is a consistent thing here. Typical peers are maintained. We talked about that. Students would connect with teachers in person twice during the on weeks. So if you remember, the first example was only 1 time a week in person. Here it would be 2 times a week in person. But then on the off weeks, they would be connecting with their teachers twice remotely. and not at all in person. So if we are looking to get some level of classroom interaction or something like that to be able to increase that this model would do it on the on weeks. It would not do it with the off weeks. And then again, consistency, so you know exactly which weeks you're on and which weeks you're off. The cons are similar as well. Again, since we're doing the cohort model, we may not be able to level some of the other classes. And again, after their week on, they would be remote learning or, getting remote experiences during their 2 weeks off, but would not necessarily have that direct teacher connection like in person the way that they would. So they would have that PM opportunities to be able to connect and get that remote learning going on. Teachers connect only twice a week on the on, which is what I talked about. And again, logistical issues that we talked about before. Anytime you're bringing students in person, you're going to be dealing with logistical challenges. And our goal, even though middle schoolers want to congregate, want to connect, we're going to be putting things in place for them to not do so, to not collaborate, to not work together, to not go out in the hallway, things like that. And again, it chops the curriculum pace to 50% again. So if we click to the next slide, you kind of see the breakdown of what that looks like. So if my child is in cohort A, that means they'd be in person Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and then all together remote on Wednesdays. We could make that an in-person day as well if we wanted to, but it's the problem is like, which periods do you decide to do? Do you decide to do 1 through 5? Do you decide to do 6 or 10? If my child is in cohort A, 1 through 5, they may not have their math class. They may have their math class in that 6 or 10 group. So to have some level of consistency, we figured bringing the entire classes together for remote learning on Wednesday works out. Obviously, that can be shifted to any day as well. It's not necessarily married to that Wednesday on that schedule. So once again, you take a look at that during that direct teaching for cohort A in the AM, that means that teachers are not going to be available for any kind of remote learning for the cohort B and C during the AM time slot, but they will be available to connect with the other two-thirds of their cohort in the PM going 6 or 10. So once again, cohort D, again, with some of our students that require additional support, there may be a small group of students that, depending on individual needs, we may need to have a little bit more often. And again, a breakdown of the periods, so you get kind of an idea of what that looks like. Similar situation as far as the periods, similar breakdown of the periods. Nothing here has really changed except that it's, again, 1 week on in person and 2 weeks off on the PM. And then Lincoln Hybrid C days. This is splitting again into 3 cohorts like we've done, same time frame, schedule changes daily. Here we're looking if we were to do in person for all of our students. So we were to do in person in the AM and in person in the PM. Obviously this increases the amount of in-person time. However, one of the most substantial logistical challenges to this is staffing. So when students are in and the teachers are working with those students, I do not have additional staff on the standby to be able to remote teach during that time. So quickly through the pros, again, splitting into the cohorts, the schedule changes, AM, again, one cohort, PM is for another cohort in person, so double the in-person work. And again, the whole purpose is to try and increase some in-person opportunities. But again, no leveling, rotating schedules. So for families looking to get on a consistent schedule, we wouldn't have that. And there would be no, right now, we don't have a remote learning plan for any of the in-person staff. So when the staff member is delivering in-person instruction, I would not have staff delivering remote learning. Again, when we're trying to think of all the ideas and all the possibilities from kind of the most straightforward to some of the more challenging, we sometimes come up with a plan that's not necessarily very viable, but we wanted to show some of the work that came from it. So if we go to the next slide, you kind of get an idea of what it looks like. So again, cohort A would be in person in the morning. We'd shut down in the middle of the day to be able to sanitize the common surfaces, to be able to clean them out, that sort of thing. But students are gone for lunch. And then cohort B would be in person. and then cohort C would be in person on Tuesday morning, and so on and so forth. So here it completely eliminates the remote option while being able to have those socially distanced classrooms. So if you take a look here, cohort C, periods 1 through 5, have 2 connections with their teacher at that time, 1 connection with their 6 or 10 staff, but then we're looking at like independent activities on the outside. So unless there's something as far as staffing that we can create, the thing that I do know is that if I have a teacher teaching cohort A in person 1 through 5 and cohort B in the PM 1 through 5, they're not available for remote learning during that time. So we don't have staff to be able to do any kind of remote learning on top of that. So not necessarily my recommendation, but just something for you to consider and take a look at. So the breakdown of the periods, again, very similar, frame as far as the time periods, similar frame as far as the lunch break periods. Again, that hour would be for cleaning off the surfaces, because we do have a new cohort potentially entering the building. So we want to make sure that that is a priority. We also know that there might be some logistical bus challenges for the PM in-person people as well. That potentially, if we were to go to this, we may look at families that are able to take care of transportation on their own, or taking a look at an additional bus cost issue to the district potentially in offering transportation options for that PM, since we're dedicating our bus staff to the elementaries to be able to take care of that. And again, cohort D, we already talked a little bit about.
Thank you, Paul. Let me make sure I'm not muted. Okay. All right. So now we're going to shift gears. So we're leading the world of hybrid, and we're going to go now to the world of full school remote learning. Before I go further, though, I want to clarify some things. This all gets so confusing. So we realize that our option one is the one that's presently on the table, and the one with our live survey right now where parents are selecting between remote and in person. But what we want to take a moment to talk about is what could be possible if everyone is remote learning in a school. Because if we're not running simultaneous programs, we can do a lot with the staff that we have available for all remote. And so that's what I'm going to take some time to talk about right now. It would be similar instructional times for each content area as in person. It would be a guarantee of academic interventions and enrichment and accelerated courses. Essentially, it's taking all the things that happen in the building of Westbrook School and moving them for a virtual experience. We have the staff to do that, and we wouldn't have the variables of substitutes. Same would follow with Lions Park and Fairview and Lincoln. There would be direct teaching by our teachers. Small group instruction would also happen. We heard you loud and clear. As families, you don't want all whole group Zoom lessons with 25 other first graders. I can't imagine why you wouldn't want that, but I'm teasing. We know that the time to do instruction is when you have a small group of children. We know this, and we would design our instructional planning around those types of opportunities. There would be regular teacher feedback, and that there wouldn't be the sense of my child's completing assignments, they're submitting them into an abyss, I don't know who's reading them, my child doesn't know who's reading them. We understand that was the experience of some of our families last spring. And there would be specific training and professional development to make sure that we're taking our feedback practices that are happening in person, and we're figuring out ways to do it well in virtual ways that are meaningful to students and actually gonna move learning forward. We would also incorporate structured opportunities for students to virtually interact with each other and develop friendships and social emotional skills. So much of school is about figuring out who you are in the context of your peer groups. And we would really actively try to provide kids with those opportunities in a virtual context, that we really believe that's important and powerful and needed in this moment. And so there would be structured opportunities for students to have that. We don't want to conceptualize any remote learning experience in a way that you're sitting and getting. We don't want to conceptualize students as passive learners in that experience. We don't believe that that's required from a virtual experience. And we believe that there's ways to train our staff to really elicit engagement and energy in the space, even in a remote context. I'm going to show some examples of what a schedule would look like. And let's start with Westbrook. So we know early childhood and kindergarten is half day. And so here's a typical schedule. I want to also be very transparent that this still requires conversations with our remote learning task force team. And so this is not at a stage where it's still in draft form, but I think it gives a taste for families about specifically the experiences, a day in the life, as we've been asked to provide. And so you can see that the day would start with a morning meeting or a community building circle where the teacher has structured opportunities for students to get to know each other, learn from each other, and just have those connections that are so a part of our in-person experiences. We know that we can bring that to a virtual world well. In preschool, there would be choice time where there'd be rotations and some free choice. That's so important for play. Our preschool staff have very talented team members who would creatively address what that would look like in a virtual world. There would be some break time because I'm a parent of preschool students. They need lots of breaks and lots of snacks. So we'll structure in some break time and lots of potty breaks too. And then there would be about 50 minutes of language group time where teachers would likely have some small group opportunities for students, which could result in more break time for the families or potentially work with an instructional assistant to do some activities that would be beneficial for the child. And then there would be structured time in small groups where pre-academic skills and therapies could be delivered. And that would be the 2.5 hour day there in the virtual world. For kindergarten, pretty similarly, but the content areas would be more specific academic structure time so that we can incorporate the importance of guided reading groups and skill instruction in writing and math, while also understanding kindergartners are little and they need break times and they're gonna need to have support in engaging in this new format. So that would be woven into a virtual experience in a remote learning context. Here's a sample elementary remote learning schedule for us to think about. For our first graders, they would also start the day with a morning meeting with their teacher and their classmates and engage in a community building circle, which is a structure that we think will be important in developing relationships and fostering strong SEL practices in our classes. You can see that there would be specific time for guided reading, and reading instruction, word study. When we talk about small groups, specifically Zoom has features that allow for breakout rooms where you can gather 5 students, 10 students, more or less, and provide individual instruction to those small groups based on the needs of those children. And there would be professional development needed to do that really well. And as mentioned in Elizabeth's letter, we believe that the sooner we can provide that training for our staff, the more consistent that delivery model can be in the experience for all District 57 students. There would be specific times identified for break and snack, and then you can see how the day goes on with specific blocks of time for math and fine arts, science and social studies. Now, I want to point out, so if you're a parent and you're looking at this and you're thinking, so you're telling me my first grader would sit on a Zoom meeting for 12:50 to 1:50. And pay attention for that hour. Not necessarily. That would be the block of time that we would want your student to be available for their teacher to work with them in math. And what that may look like in that 60-minute block of time is the teacher providing a mini lesson, as we call it, where there's 15 minutes of direct instruction, some visuals, potentially movies that relate to the concept. We have lots of different skill resources that we can use from a virtual way. And then the teacher, just as in the classroom, would likely do what we call a gradual release of responsibility, where students are assigned work potentially in peer groups or in small groups, or they're set off to try a task and the teacher moves and checks in and provides feedback for what that new learning is looking like. And so depending on the purpose of the lesson and the goal, the objective of it, there may be different structures, but we wouldn't be having students sit and receive a lecture through Zoom for 60 minutes at a time, just in the same way that we would not expect a first grade child in any of our classrooms in our schools to sit and receive a lecture in math for 60 minutes at a time. Although our blocks are protected around 60 minutes of math, and the teacher is the professional and this person that is skilled in taking that 60 minutes and structuring in the way that's developmentally appropriate for his or her students. And so we really want to stress this, because I think that can sometimes get lost in looking at a schedule like this and thinking, how would that work in a virtual world? So you can see that kind of goes on, so on and so forth. Very similar for Fairview Lines Park with a bit more instructional minutes. The breakdown to this would be provided above. This would be the ways that we would organize our thinking around minutes per day. But we also, just as in a typical week, there are some variables. Some fine arts, maybe an hour for art, or there may be periods of time where teachers have their building level team meetings. And so we would provide a schedule for every student, and that would come from the classroom teacher and more specific to the individual school that's related to the master schedule of the building. Now, here's a sample middle school remote learning schedule. Paul, I will hand it over to you for you to elaborate on this.
Sure. So actually, it's relatively similar to our schedule currently. So our schedule currently is about 38 minutes. Here it drops down to about 30 minutes to be able to make sure that we have our the transitions in place and so on. But essentially, the idea, and we did operate on a similar schedule in the spring, but here it's a little bit more robust on it, where we have students following their schedules. So Mr. Stina has done the traditional scheduling in PowerSchool. And what we'd be able to do is we'd be able to just use their actual regular ordinary PowerSchool schedule that's already established. So students would be able to follow their schedule. Classes that are blocked, math blocks that are blocked, they're here. We strategically place lunch where it's at to not split any of those blocks, to make sure that we maintained ELA and math blocks accordingly. And this gives opportunities for teachers to be able to connect with their students. And kind of like what Mary said before, again, don't laminate this and print off 1,000 copies yet, but the idea is you get an idea of what that framework can look like. The other thing is, as far as the end of the day, as far as a connection time or small group or intentional check-ins, we're still in development of that and what that would look like. The other thing is, again, 30 minutes. So if you think of your typical class being about 38 minutes, no teacher stands in front of the class and lectures from minute one to minute 38. There would not necessarily be an expectation that, again, a teacher is Zoom lecturing from 7:45 all the way till the end of the day. But with that comes collaboration, breakout rooms, using technology, potentially having students collaborate together in some of those breakout rooms, working on some of the things. So within that 30 minutes, it gives you a little bit of work there to be able to utilize that time, as opposed to an expectation that kids are just talked at for 7 hours. That office hours time, similar to how it is on a typical day, teachers would be available during those periods. Core teachers are available during those lunch periods. And the idea is that they're available so they could be answering emails at the time. A student may want to check in with them. A teacher may want to check in with that student, similar to how students come up from lunch in an in-person setting to be able to get additional support or for the teacher to reach out. So those 30 minutes are there for that intentional connection or availability of staff during that time, since they are getting an actual lunch break where they have that specific time off.
Okay, thank you so much, Paul.
Yep.
All right. So you've heard about a variety of hybrid models. You heard more about what not in-person remote, those are not the same, full remote would be. And now we want to just pause and reflect a bit on sustainability challenges that we've touched on as a theme of this presentation. We, as you've heard loud and clear, any in-person or hybrid model does have significant safety and sustainable challenges that we want to be considered. Staff absences and quarantining will result in significant challenges to a stable instructional model. There are just so many scenarios that parents and staff have asked us in the last 7 days, what our response will be, and then you can fill in the blank. You know, it's kind of like there's a million infinite different ways. What will happen if this happens? What will happen if this happens? And the reality is that we can provide our responses in a way that's congruent to the ISBE and IDPH guidance, and certainly that will be the intention to follow things in the most thorough and legally according way. However, when we think about a model for education and the relationships that children depend on and the adults who provide that education, we fear that a lot of our models will be delivered by people that are unfamiliar to children, you know, and there'll be a lot of long-term subbing happening, and there will be a lot of unpredictable changes that can happen day to day. And it certainly is in with the backdrop of this is in the midst of a pandemic that's still out of control. And so we don't know what the fall will bring. We can only speculate based on the numbers and what's been happening in models that are happening in the summer, most of which are outdoor camps. So we have to figure that when we're bringing things into buildings, logic would follow that there will be lots of different scenarios of absences. We also want to point out that there are specific team members on our staffs for whom if they are absent, we really can't safely provide any in-school experiences. And examples of that would be our nurses, our custodians, if our front office staff are out, or if our administrators are out quarantining. You really can't run a safe school experience if you don't have these staff members available. And as many of you can imagine, we don't have sub pools that are very deep in these positions. We don't have the luxury of having 200 nurses available. We really don't. And we anticipate that people who have typically subbed in any position in the past may not want to be in an exposed context where they're potentially at risk. So we'd have to alert the board to that possibility and also our community to understand that those types of decisions may occur. And it's to everyone's dread that we would have to change plans for an entire school of people for something like that. But it's important to forecast if it's possible. We do believe that because of this, and also because of the challenges of staffing, we really think that academic programming will be affected in a negative way. That interventions such as literacy support, LSS, math support, MSS, and the enrichment accelerated courses that we offer may not be possible in the way that we're going to need to make really difficult decisions about how we're staffing remote learning, hybrid learning, you know, in-person learning. We're going to be really stretched thin in the way that we make these assignments. And just to be redundant, but important to note, even if we were to be able to achieve these programs, which we certainly will strive to do, there's nothing guaranteeing that those staff members who are highly qualified will in fact be available to provide that instruction. And so I just want to keep emphasizing these possibilities. And finally, we think that from an equity lens, we really are concerned about ensuring a quality experience for students who are viewing live instruction at home versus students who are in a classroom receiving live instruction from a teacher. And we want to be clear to the board and the community that we have every intention to maintain very high standards from our delivery of a product of education, but we want to be realistic and that there are going to be some compromises in the way that we can feasibly deliver that service. And we want to be very clear about those possibilities up front. So next, I'm going to ask Dr. Ahmiller to give an overview of the criteria that we suggest using in comparing these models.
In attempting to wrap up our presentation, we thought we'd try to give an overview of what each of these hybrids and full school remote learning look like. The check marks are reflective of educators and administrators' perspective. Granted, if parents were filling this out, it may look very differently, but this is from educators and administrators' perspective. So if we take a look at student and staff safety, the half-day hybrid without lunch is moderately safe. Full-day hybrid lunch, less safe. Full in-person with the ISBE and IDPH guidelines, even less safe. Full school remote learning, we feel, is the safest model of all. Teaching and learning under half-day hybrid without lunch, moderately successful. Same for full-day hybrid with lunch, slightly more successful with full in-person following ISBE guidelines. And the same for full school remote learning. We didn't put 5 check marks in these boxes simply because 5 check marks would indicate that we are seeing the same impact as pre-COVID. And we know that learning in school is different now. So we didn't want to be so bold as to say it's going to be every bit as good as it was before pre-COVID. It's just not realistic. And the sustainability factor, only moderately sustainable with the half-day hybrid, the same with the full-day hybrid, even less so with full in-person. I think Mary's done a good job of explaining how the slightest alteration of the school day, the absences, this whole model can crash under its own weight. And the full sustainability model, full school remote learning, is what's most sustainable for us. And now I'm going to turn it back over to Mary, and she will wrap up the presentation for us. Here, you're muted. You're muted.
I'm sorry, everyone. All right, in closing, we want to wrap up now and revisit the options that we respectfully present to you for consideration. The first option is staying with the model that we proposed to the board and community last week, and that would be a parent choice between a full in learning and or a full remote learning choice for their child. Just to remind families that and the board that if families select full remote learning, we're asking them to commit to the first grading period, and that's spelled out in the survey. You've heard about the pros and you've heard about the cons to that. If that's selected, the next step would simply be keep our surveys open and hold the same deadline of Monday as the deadline for families to make their selection. Option 2 would be keeping this option for the elementary families and selecting a full in-person choice for their child or a full remote learning choice, but moving Lincoln to a full remote learning start to the year. In the interest of safety and in the recognition that the limitations that Lincoln faces given the size of the building and the number of students and staff is significant to consider. And again, we're revisiting the recommendation of a phased in hybrid learning model, which would be needed to be determined which one. Would the goal, the tentative target date to do to start would be October 19th. If that's selected, the enrollment form deadline for elementary families would still be Monday, but we would not continue with an enrollment form for Lincoln as everyone would start remotely in that case, with the exception of families who we would initiate contact with just to have conversations about eligibility to have access to in-person learning. Option 3 is the option we believe is the best choice given all of the facts and information we've shared tonight. And option 3 would be starting the year with full remote learning for all students in elementary and all students at Lincoln, with those exceptions of those student groups provided information throughout the survey on. And if this is the decision of the board, the next step we believe and would recommend would be to survey our staff and our families to receive feedback about what hybrid model is their opinion of what would be the best fit. Our position is the safest would be a half-day model because it eliminates the risks associated with maskless times during lunch. It does, we understand, offer challenges though, and it may not be what families and staff feel, but we believe from a safety perspective, it's undeniable that that is the safest of the hybrids we talked about tonight. Option four would be if the board decided that a hybrid learning model would be a choice for families, and families could then choose between a hybrid start to the year for their child or a full remote start. And in that case, we would need to update our survey and make those the updated options. For the families who have already submitted their survey, we would have the ability to contact those families and provide them with an opportunity to reselect based on the updated options. And Lincoln, we still would recommend a full remote learning start for the board's consideration with that phased-in hybrid learning model beginning later in the fall. We would respectfully ask that if option four is considered for the, by the board, that we would really love for the direction of which hybrid model would be selected. And the reason for this is, though, is not because we don't care about what families would want. It's quite the opposite. But the reality is the beginning of school is really coming quickly. And any hybrid change right now is quite challenging to deliver. And we would be very concerned about the ability for our administrative team and our staff to turn around and make sure that we're staffing something that we believe is a quite a complicated model and has a lot of implications for families in the way that they are going to have different preferences. So we would really need that direction as soon as possible and very ideally tonight, if that is direction. And option five would be even more complicated, but it is in front of you as a choice. And that would be starting the year with elementary with the parent choice of either a hybrid learning model or full remote, and the same for Lincoln families. And again, if that is the route the board believes is the correct one, we would respectfully ask that you identify which hybrid learning model is the one that you believe is best and provide us with that guidance so that tomorrow morning we can update our planning and do everything possible to expedite the plans that will be successful. I just want to reiterate the plan that we believe is the most viable and the safest and the one that we believe meets the highest marks in the criteria we describe would be option three. And so in closing, we'll come back to that slide if there's any questions on this one. In closing, our recommendation is what I shared, that we start with a remote learning for all students until mid-October, and with a tentative start date of re-engaging in in-person learning for students in a hybrid model by October 19th as our goal. Certainly, the landscape in this world can change very quickly, and so when we advertise a tentative targeted date, it is with the recognition that that would only be the recommendation if that could be safely delivered and if the context of the Restore Illinois model has not gone down or other risk factors haven't emerged for us to consider. We believe that we will be able to provide in-person access for specific groups of children, which we've talked about tonight. And so we want to be recognizing that remote learning for some groups of students is just not the way to go. And we want to be purposeful in how we identify those options for families. In choosing the option three tonight, we would be able to provide alignment in all of our planning for all of our staff to hit the ground running for the first day of school on August 20th. We would be able to provide very specific and targeted professional development on high quality remote learning pedagogy. We could provide important trainings around the technology updates we have purchased in preparation for this model. We have a subscription to Zoom, Screencastify, which allows recorded presentations and instruction, Newzella, which is an extremely wonderful program that allows for differentiated current events text for students. We will use our Google Classroom and Seesaw as our systems where all students will launch from. Google Classroom will be for second grade through eighth grade, and Westbrook will use Seesaw. So we have a lot of exciting technology that we are eager to get our staff trained in, but I think knowing that we would all be going in this direction would allow for us to focus our energies on this objective. We also could provide some anticipatory training on hybrid and get started with what might be involved in meeting that October target date. We would want to get started on those conversations and training immediately. We also would feel secure in the ability to provide that social distance and safety protocol training that our MPESPA instructional assistants shared in a letter to you to consider, that there is a significant amount of training that we think our staff needs in order to keep themselves and their students safe. And we want to be able to capitalize on this time where we can feel more secure in the way that we have access to our staff to provide that training. And certainly there's ongoing school improvement work that we need to do for student assessment data and learning and success gaps to make sure that we're moving all students in District 57 forward. And lastly, substitute training, because in any model, even full remote, there still will be a need for well-trained and well-prepared substitute teachers who, again, we're very fortunate in our district to have wonderful, loyal subs, but we want to provide them with the training and the supports necessary to be as successful as possible when they would need to take over for a virtual remote learning class. And so with that, that concludes our information. Thank you so much for the opportunity to provide this overview. And at this point, I will send it over to Ms. Kowalczyk for any questions the board may have.
Okay. I want to thank you. Thank everybody, the staff for coming to this meeting, for admin coming to this meeting, being available for questions and for your input. I can say we can all agree that it's the safety of our kids and our staff that we are all concerned about. And I think you highlighted quite a bit of that tonight. I'll open it up to the other board members for any questions that they might have, specifics to anyone in particular, if it's, staff, admin, the principals, like anybody, because we have the Fairview principal, the Lyons Park principal, Westbrook principal, we have everybody on if you have any questions in regards to that. So if anybody would like to get started.
Vicki?
Okay, Vicki, you can go ahead. Yes. Thank you.
I just want to echo Eileen by, thanking our school principals, our MPA and PESPA leadership for joining us tonight and for the letters that you wrote and read to us. Since you're all here, I thought I'd start with talking about our teachers and staff. So both MPA and PESPA recommend beginning with remote learning. And then I think both of you worded that way by saying by beginning. So I just wonder if you have a sense of how, like the rest of the membership, how people feel about that October 19th date of actually returning. I mean, is there a, and maybe it's not realistic, but there was no offer of full remote learning, I don't know, indefinitely or until we reach phase five or something along those lines. So I just wonder how the teachers and staff are feeling about October 19th. Do they feel like, would they become more comfortable then? Or is it just, they want to start with remote learning and see how it goes?
I believe it's an evolving and constantly changing situation. And with the time that it would take between now and then to see how trends have changed, how new studies have evolved in giving information about that, it's a good touch point to reevaluate. We did say we wanted to be sensitive to stakeholders and understand not everybody wants this for the whole year, but we want to make sure that we're sensitive to that possibility of reevaluating at some point.
And I think that's why we said tentative date of October 19th, because we're not sure which way the trends are going to go.
And another thing, August is not fall, where October 19th is in the fall, and many of the reports that we have heard about say that there could be a surge in cases in the fall. So not only do we want to get more learning time to get to that October 19th tentative date, hopefully downward and gone, but that's a big hope.
Is there, I just want to ask one thing in there. Is there a date that we would reevaluate at if we were thinking of not doing the October 19th date? Would you reevaluate October 1st? Because, I mean, we would have to let parents and, you know, everybody know, is there a reevaluation point if October 19th is the set date?
Do you want me to answer?
Mary or Elaine, I would think Edmund.
I think we, yes, absolutely. We actually think that it would be ongoing, and we would intend for communication to be updated probably at every board meeting between now and then, would be our thinking, for those reasons that people need to have updates about what would be the metrics used to determine if that would be the right move to make. And obviously the board would ultimately need to provide that direction as well. We would have no interest in delaying that to a last minute decision. We would want to be transparent and have a very strong process in place for all stakeholders to know what they can expect and how they can be engaged in the time to provide feedback and input along the way. So that would be our position.
Okay. Vicki, go ahead. I'm sorry about that.
No, I'm glad you asked. I guess also, we've heard, if Mr. Siminski, you'd like to speak as well, but I'd love to hear if Mr. Ofis, Mrs. Kelly, Mrs. Vonderhauer, if you had anything that you just wanted to say about your feelings about this plans, or yeah, if you had a preference too, or how you foresee the next few months might go.
I can start. I feel like there's a lot of wisdom in being patient. It's very easy to be impatient in situations when we're not getting what we want. And the reality is, you know, every educator in District 57 wants to be with our students, and we want to be back to normal. And that's what the desire is. And so it's easy to become impatient and say, well, let's just make that happen. But then when you really start to think about the logistics that Mary went over so well, it really does feel like this is a system that's set up for failure based on the recommendations that were given by the state. I understand that they were trying to do the best they could with what they had to try to get us back in person, but very, very little amount of trial will cause this to crumble. And that's going to be worse for our kids when we have sudden changes that cause us to have to flip-flop back and forth between remote and in person. And I just feel like as a community, it's wise for us to be patient. I think we look across the country, there's been examples where people haven't been patient and it doesn't have the best result. And so to me, by waiting and seeing what happens, the nice thing is we do have districts around us that are doing different things. We can learn from others by just giving it some time and waiting and seeing what is happening. Was it successful elsewhere? Did they have a train wreck? Like, was it really tough because of all of the different trials that came their way? So to me, it's wise to start remote as the recommendation has been made, and to be patient, resist the temptation to be impatient and to just get on with it. That's kind of how I feel. And it really, it goes down to the logistics. I think of the scenario of a teacher in a moment's notice, they may have a family member who gets COVID, and now they have to quarantine for 14 days. And in a moment, the next day, I need to have a sub who's ready to teach for 14 days. And that's stressful. It's not easy to find subs to begin with, and to say, hey, who can commit for 14 days? It's difficult. And that's just one example of many that's going to cause this to crumble. So I'm pretty worried about that. And obviously safety. I don't want us to jump into this and then we're sitting at a board meeting where we're talking about, you know, the unfortunate death of a student or a staff member. That to me is very scary. So that's how I feel about it right now.
Thank you. I think that, as Dan said, you know, as educators, we all want to be back doing what it is that we do and what it is that we set out to do in our careers and for the families in our community. It's hard to think about the answer to that question without also considering the various hats that you wear. You know, obviously I'm a parent of two students in District 57. I'm also a principal of a school, and I was once a teacher, you know, so I view it from all of those lenses. And obviously as a full-time working parent, you know, having my children back in school full-time would assist me greatly in being able to do my work more easily. As a principal, you know, over the past several weeks, I've been getting so many questions from staff, from parents, and they're questions, but really they're also looking for assurances. They're looking for assurances of safety for themselves, for their children. And it's a very difficult position because prior to this, as a school administrator, I've really felt like I was able to honestly tell people, yes, we have a good plan. Your children are safe. You are safe here. Now, we always know that there are always things that could happen, worst case scenario. But I feel like those seem like really unlikely events, generally speaking. But in this case, it's very different, you know, it's a very different scenario. And so I struggle with providing those assurances to people, you know, and it, as some of the questions come about, you know, HVAC systems and things like that, it being an airborne, I mean, we don't know these things, but I don't know those answers, and I'm not an expert in those things. And so I find it very difficult to offer people the peace of mind that they want, and it's a challenging position in that regard. Obviously, there are drawbacks to not having the children come back to school, and I understand that very well, but some of the worst case scenarios in those situations don't keep me up at night in the same way that the worst case scenarios of bringing back people back into the building do. But it's really complicated, so it's difficult to, you know, say like I prefer one of these because I prefer that we weren't in this position at all, you know, but I think that I certainly prefer safety for staff and students first and foremost.
And I'll touch on that too. I completely agree with what Dan and Katie have shared. I think safety is of utmost concern for students and staff, especially for our youngest learners. We're really looking at consistency and that social emotional learning piece. And to Dan's point, if something happened where we needed to reschedule and not reschedule, but go from in-person to remote, and then we might need to mix up classrooms, that's going to affect consistency, that social emotional learning piece. I do feel strongly that the remote learning would allow us to build those strong connections with students. And to Katie's point too, I think that is keeping me up at night too, the safety concerns. And I think as we were working alongside the different unions and the task force and thinking through how to best support those populations who need in-person learning, I feel confident that we would be able to provide them with the in-person that they would need for that extra support as well.
And just jumping on that, I support everything that the principal said. Obviously, Lincoln has logistical challenges that go a little bit above and beyond. But when it comes down to safety, I mean, that anytime anybody asks me my number one job responsibility, it's always safety. Safety trumps everything, even education, because without safety, without making sure that our staff and students are safe, there will not be any learning going on. So that is like, as far as a hierarchy of needs, that's gotta be down. And I think that's a big question mark. And anytime you have that as a question mark, it's hard to move forward. So we are all by nature problem solvers. And I think that the more that we tinkered, the more that we dealt with it, the more that we went into it, the more we saw some of the significant logistical challenges that exist. So when we talk about, you know, a teacher potentially, you know, coming into exposure and out a minimum of 2 weeks, what does that look like at the middle school? Does that shut down that teacher? And so all six of those classes then go remote, or does it not go remote? We have some subs that specifically will not take math because math, the middle school level, they're like, you know what, that's above and beyond my abilities. So finding some of those specialized people that are willing to, again, on the fly, pick those up. We deal with sub shortages on the regular. But it's typically a day here or there, something like that, as opposed to just immediately like getting a significant drawback. And then the students as well that are knocked out of that. So my concerns are how fragile things potentially could be in those kind of situations. And it invites an opportunity that all it takes is just one little tick for several dominoes to fall, and potentially we're in shutdown. And so flipping over to remote just instantly when it was like, wait a second, we gave it a try, or did we hope for the best, or did we truly plan and say, you know what, we feel like this is sustainable. And so that's where that last category of sustainability was a very important one, because all it takes is something outside of our control that we cannot plan for, and we're just back at square one. So when we relook at safety, when we do say that we do want to continue to reevaluate, we want to pay attention to the data, the numbers, and everything else, and continue to reevaluate. This isn't let's hang it on the shelf and let's talk about it later. It's like, no, we have to continue to talk about this and what this looks like, and make sure that we're doing everything that we can to, if there are those opportunities and those safe opportunities, let's continue to explore them.
Vicki, I would like to add one thing. On page 34 of the state guidelines, it says individuals who have a temperature of greater than 100.4 degrees or currently have known symptoms of COVID-19, which are fever, cough, shortness of breath, difficulty breathing, chills, fatigue, muscle and body aches, headache, sore throat, loss of taste and smell, congestion or runny nose, nausea, vomiting, or diarrhea may not enter the building. And to me, that's a symptom for every sickness I've ever known. Most that I've known. I mean, people are smarter than me and probably have other symptoms that they may have encountered. But when I look at the school, like anyone who has one of those is going to be is not allowed in the building. And that includes staff and that includes students. And so to Mary's point earlier, it is not going to take long for us to have massive shortages of staff. And it's just logistically, whether you believe this is the right thing or not, if we have to follow the guidelines, we're basically setting, that's why I mean, like, we're setting ourselves up for failure by not just starting remote, in my opinion, because we're going to be remote within a matter of potentially 2 days if there's something that comes through that causes a good number of people to be sick. So if we're going to follow the guidelines, we need to really think through, is this logistically possible?
Thank you.
Yep. I just wanted to make one point in regards to like the sickness and everything. We as the suburbs of Chicago are now included with that group in Chicago, that if you are in one of these 18 states, right now it's 18 states, it could increase, that when you come back from one of those states, you have to self-quarantine for 2 weeks. So when people are still planning vacations, are they taking a vacation right up until when school starts, and are they going to one of these 18 states? And will we know if they self-quarantine? It's an honor system. And so that's where more dominoes take effect. Where are people actually doing what they're supposed to be doing? I had a vacation planned this summer. I canceled it because it was down south and I didn't want to be part of an experiment. But I just think that some people might not be honest about their trip if they are going on one and self-quarantine. I'm just saying that because I think people would actually do that. Not everybody, but I think there are people that just might. And we have to take that in consideration that there are a lot of things we're putting people on the honor system, but we're entrusting them to people who expect them to do this. And if they're not willing to do it, I don't know how we can expect people to be put into that unsafe situation. Go ahead, Vicki.
Okay. I know everyone has a lot of questions, so I'll just ask one more and then I'll give everyone else a chance. So on slide 26, it's called, I don't know, you can't see this, full school remote learning. There's some bullet points about things that would happen should we return to full school remote learning. I mean, sounds wonderful. You've got guarantee of academic interventions and enrichment and accelerated courses, small group instruction, support by teachers and instructional assistants, regular teacher feedback within the school week. So I was just wondering, so this is full school remote learning. Like, let's say we offered both remote learning and hybrid at the same time. Like, let's say that was the decision, you know, come August, these are the two options we're offering. How would that affect, I guess, would it, but how would that affect like this, like the things that are on here? Like, would these things still be offered if we offered both at the same time, or this is just if we're able to really focus and concentrate? And so that's my question.
I can answer, is that?
It would
be challenging, but there's some variables that I want to be upfront about. It would be important for us to know in that scenario what hybrid model. I think some are potentially more viable than others in the way that they disrupt staffing, but they aren't necessarily the ones that we recommend as best for kids. So, you know, the more regularly students are switching, the more sort of volatile our staffing is in the way that we can run a simultaneous remote program for students and families, you know, who select this as the nonstop choice for their child for the first grading period. And that's really difficult. And I would say that's been a large number of the parents who have contacted me very concerned and very upfront about those decisions being the key drivers of the choice they're making. They say, just tell me how I'm going to be able to continue with enrichment for my child in fourth grade. If you tell me remote, I'll choose remote. If you tell me in person, I'll choose in person. And what I've said to these families is the honest truth, which is it may not be one of those choices. It'll be related to what other people choose. Because when we have to look at our staffing, we don't have, in our staffing models, we don't have a lot of additional positions who aren't teaching a full caseload of students. In fact, we have essentially none. we have a couple, but we believe that those are positions that we wouldn't want to take away. And because they have very important delivery assignments and their job titles are essential to what we believe kids need. But some of those positions are interventionists. We have full-time interventionists. And so potentially you could take that program, which is so important to supporting the success of students with academic needs. And those people could be providing a remote learning section if our numbers warranted that. You could also look at your elementary enrichment teachers. They are also extremely important to our system. We don't think that they're frivolous by any means. We believe that they're doing very critical work, and they're moving students sometimes who are two grade levels above in the way that their academic performance is, they're moving them forward. And so it would be very upsetting to us as well to think that we would have to make difficult decisions about those job assignments. But we also understand that we've got to provide our families in this context of the phase four. If they're not comfortable sending their children into the buildings, we need to provide options for them to have remote learning. And we also believe it's responsible to not disincentivize being honest about your health status. And if parents have to make decisions about, if I'm honest that my family member had COVID or that my child had exposure, but that means that they won't have access to learning for 14 weeks. To me, you're putting families in a very bad situation. They have to choose between being honest and having 14 days of learning. And if we have a continuous remote learning option for families, I think that's the right thing to do. And I also think that's the way to keep us safe if we're going to be running multiple models. So I wouldn't recommend there be, in the interest of enrichment or the interest of interventions, I wouldn't recommend considering a way of taking out our remote learning plan as a simultaneous one, because I think in doing so, you do disincentivize the way that people are going to keep each other safe. But to your question, Vicki, yes, I worry the more complicated our offerings, the more difficult it's going to be at this moment to provide the assurances that everyone would like to provide, because we want to be really honest that we may not be able to provide those guarantees, because we just want to be really conservative in those estimates, because we don't have the numbers right now to speculate. You know, we need more enrollment data before we can make those guarantees.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Vicki. Since I can see you, Jen, did you want to go?
I have a few questions.
Okay,
Jen,
Brian,
go ahead. If you have...
Go ahead, let Brian go next. That's fine.
Okay. Go, Brian.
Well, thank you very much for your presentation. I know this is a very challenging time for everyone. I commend you, administration, for putting all the work into the presentation last week. And then when there were some concerns by the board and from parents, you dedicated this so much time and effort this week to reevaluation, to communicating with different sources and come up with these options. So I appreciate that. I have a few questions. One, if we decided to on option three, return full remote learning at the start of school, how will we address the households with two working parents? Are we in a position to support them, accommodate them?
Well, one thing we have started to toss around is offering childcare for the day. But through our Kids Corner program, but it's very new to us to be thinking about this at this point in time. So we're not sure if we even have the staff that would want to work a full day, but it's one option that we're considering.
You mean that? I'm not clear on that. So.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't.
So if you're a student, and your parents have to go to work, and you don't, as a student, you can't stay at home, to participate in remote learning, what does that student do?
To be honest, I don't know that we have any answers for the family situations like that. There'll be some very difficult decisions that will have to be made by families, and we recognize that. But I'm not sure that we can give them direction on what they would need to do.
But as you know, Dr. Amler did indicate, there we are in the early stages of looking at expanding Kids Corner to, instead of being as it's currently run, before and after school care, to extend that for in that hypothetical scenario. Okay. If we were to deliver that option, then in that theory, you know, a parent could elect to use the childcare available that would now be full day, and feasibly that child could access their learning throughout the day if they were at a school during the day. It's very, very early stages, so not with a guarantee of this, but definitely something that we're willing to investigate and see if that's available for working families.
Okay. So I anticipate that being an issue for many families. And I think we need to be prepared to accommodate those families. My other question is, if we did not have a staffing issue, purely from a health and safety standpoint, would we be able to begin the year with option five, the hybrid model?
Was the question, if staffing was no issue, would the health and safety be recommended? We think at this time that any in-person model still has risk to health and safety. And depending on the specific hybrid that we're talking about, we think there's varied degrees, some we believe to be safer than others, because more social distancing is available on the half day, for example, you know, or no eating at school means that kids aren't having times without masks. So we think that it's still has risk though. it still has risk associated because it involves people coming into buildings, interacting with each other, interacting with students, germs being in the air and all surfaces. And despite efforts to be more systematic and have thorough cleaning and disinfecting, we still believe that the minute those doors open and everyone brings their germs and exposure to each other, yes, there's still risk. And for that reason, though, we think more time would allow for us to really provide thorough training, thorough systems, thorough procedures, so that we can be more confident in the way that our staff all, not just our administrative team, not just, you know, our task force, we have a large staff in our district, and we want to make sure every single employee of this district can say, I feel confident that I'm knowledgeable about how to keep myself safe and other people around me safe. And we think time is not on our side to do that if we have a start date of August 20th for anything in person.
I think that's a great point, because I was going to make the point that October 19th is not far away.
Yeah.
And if, you know, the infection rate and death rate, et cetera, were to remain static, what would be the difference between now and October 19th? And I think you hit it on the nail on the head that it provides us more time to provide training to our teachers and staff, to allow our school district to be better prepared to deal with this. And quite frankly, I my preference is a more conservative approach. I don't think we should rush into it. And I also think in terms of the board making a decision, I don't know if the board is prepared to make a decision tonight. We can certainly address that a little later, but I don't think we need to rush into this. It's such an important decision. And so I appreciate that we've had this additional information. I think we should digest this information and ultimately come to a decision after, you know, considering our options. But I had one more question. I'll let someone else ask a question right now, but thank you for your presentation, your hard work. Appreciate it.
Okay. Jen, did you want to go ahead then?
Sure. I want to echo, I really appreciate the thoroughness of this presentation, all the hard work that's gone in. I know it's a really difficult time to try to figure out what is right to do. And I think you've leveraged all the experts. So really appreciate the collaboration as well as everybody's participation today. It's been awesome to hear from the school principals and the board members and the teachers union, everybody. Just really appreciate it. I don't have any questions. I felt like it was very thorough. I know my answer. So whenever we're ready to give it, if we're going to give it, happy to do so. And with that, I'll just stop talking. So.
Okay, Jerry, go ahead.
Sorry, my mute wouldn't go off. I have first a comment and then one question. The first was related to Lincoln. After listening to the presentation, I still, and I know, you know, it's tentative and everything for October 18th. I feel a little bit like with Lincoln, we're trying to put a square peg in a round hole. It doesn't necessarily lend itself to the hybrid models as easily without what appears to be kind of slowing down the learning process. And would we consider leaving Lincoln in an online only environment while going to a hybrid in the other schools because of the challenges faced, the unique challenges faced at Lincoln?
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. None of the hybrids are really ideal for Lincoln. And it does compromise the instructional program that we can provide. So where we sit, doing Lincoln remote for the foreseeable future is really the way to go. Paul, did you want to add anything onto that?
Anytime you have more logistics and more challenges with logistics, it's dealing with something like this, especially again with the size of students and everything else, it is it does present itself with more substantial challenges. So hopefully that was conveyed and you were able to kind of digest that a little bit. But again, if there are any questions from the presentation, please let me know.
Yeah, thank you. And the second thought that came to mind after the feedback from the teachers, both unions actually, would, if the students are out of the classrooms, would the plan be for the teachers to actually be in person and leverage the classroom environment, even in a remote learning environment, or would everyone stay out of the schools completely?
That's something that we still have to work through. It would probably be a combination of both, because we have heard from some teachers who want to do the remote learning from their classroom because of the equipment that's available to them there. But we do have some teachers that, because of their own family situations, it would be easier for them to do it from home. And I think we would be flexible in trying to accommodate that with the staff.
Okay. And like the others, thank you very much. I think, you know, the work that's gone into the planning and just laying out all the possible scenarios is extremely helpful to understand. And I know there's, you know, we're taking it day by day, and we'll have to keep revisiting as time goes on. But thank you very much.
Okay. Kim, did you want to go ahead?
Yes, but actually, Elizabeth, I saw you had your hand up with regard to something that Jerry had mentioned. Did you want to go ahead?
I did. As we're talking about the delivery of hybrid, it was clear that Lincoln would slow down. But as we look at the delivery method for our elementaries, because the teachers are both in front of the students and not in front, you know, and have students at home, it wouldn't maintain the same pace at that point as well. I just wanted to point that out.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you sharing that perspective. And I just want to, at the risk of being trite, kind of relate again how deeply appreciative I am of our administration and the way that you've all stepped up to really model, I think, what we want for all of our kids to be learning, which is this growth mindset mentality. That, you know, just because we put a plan forth doesn't mean that has to be the plan. I think the example that you're all setting as far as incorporating some of the feedback that we've gotten from the community at large and being able to model that flexibility that we want for all of our students to be learning and exhibiting, I'm blown away. Very, very grateful. I just can't thank you all enough for the time and effort that you've all put into this process. Elizabeth, I think when you were speaking originally and mentioned the challenges of our current climate and the way that limits our ability to put education that meets the local standards that the community is used to, that was definitely one of the issues that I had felt with the plan that was presented last week, in addition to Feline, what you were saying about the need to prioritize safety. And so I'm really glad that some of these new models or possibilities that we're hearing about really do take those factors into account. I think with regard to the plan that we discussed last week, Dr. Gore, I think it's true that the in-person model was proposed to be within the legal limits, right? The legal standards that were set forth. But to me, it really felt like the minimum, you know, that's the least that we could do. And I don't find District 57 to be a district of the least that we can do. I really, my experience as a parent here and, you know, my interaction on the board thus far has been that we really go above and beyond, and that's something that the community for, that we're kind of known for or touted for.
And that that aspect of the education that we provide in this community tends to be a draw for people who are moving in or relocating. So again, I'm just really glad to see that, you know, we're working towards a model that really reflects the character of our district more so than what was presented previously. I also really appreciate the time that you've all taken to take into account some of the maybe higher needs learners with regard to ELL students, students on IEPs, and trying to address that equity disparity that might be caused if we do full 100% of our population remote learning. I just think that that's very in tune with our community, and I hope that that will be appreciated by the families who are impacted by that. As far as my questions, a mention about, Dr. Gore, I think you mentioned that if we were to move into a hybrid model, contrary, as far as the teachers are concerned, that would be a change of working condition that would have to be bargained for. And as a first-term board member, I'm not familiar with how that would work necessarily, but I wonder if that same premise would hold if we were to move to full remote learning as well.
I can, or Dr. Emmeler, do you want to answer that?
At this point, the union has not mentioned a change of working condition with going remote learning, but that's always a possibility. But to this point in time, I've not been made aware of it.
Okay. So there wouldn't be any additional negotiations on the back end to make a remote learning plan work in the next 4 weeks, is what I'm
not, not that I'm aware of at this moment in time.
Okay, thank you. And then with regard to the additional busing costs, maybe this is a question for Adam if he's available. It sounds significant from what we may have budgeted for, and I'm concerned as to who would ultimately bear that cost. I know we've had community feedback about how expensive our transportation costs in the district are already. Are we going to be potentially forwarding additional costs onto families?
In the, sorry about that. In the multi-purpose room here at Fairview, in the hybrid model where the elementary students are splitting half days, that would increase transportation costs from about 800,000 to about 1.6 million. Ultimately that would be the board's decision. If we were pass that, those costs onto the family members, or if the district bears the cost, but I mean, it's double the cost in a pretty significant way. And the district would have to bear, the cost in some manner.
Okay. So it sounds like that aspect is to be determined also as far as the proportions. And I think my other two questions I think may have already been answered, but I just want to reiterate to clarify, particularly with regard to Lincoln, if Lincoln goes to a hybrid model for families who have a middle schooler and an elementary schooler, it sounds like there's not going to be any way to line up those schedules. Is the same true for families who say have a student at Westbrook and a student at Lyons or Fairview? It sounds like all of the, no matter where you are, if you have different kids in different schools, it's going to be different schedules.
So we could probably do a lot of creative things and work really hard to be as accommodating as possible, but that takes a significant amount of time. And so I think we would want to be cautious in giving those assurances in this moment, certainly if we're talking in relation to an August 20th start date. I think if we're looking to a later in the fall re-engagement in some type of hybrid, I think we can be more optimistic and say we will certainly give our best to making realistic plans, knowing that you can never make everyone happy. And having done AM and PM placements at Westbrook School for 9 years, you really quickly get down the rabbit hole of knowing like siblings' sleep schedules You know, I know, like, I know, and I get it. As a parent, I get it. It's all of those things are relevant to a family when you're deciding about how my child is going to be available for half a day. We totally understand that. But from a district perspective, it's pretty challenging to think of how that will be replicated across multiple schools and all the, so we want to be cautious in the way that we will do our best, but time is definitely a major factor in our optimism here. I think we're very unlikely to achieve any flexible response that parents would like in a very short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. No, I can certainly understand that. I just have two last things and then I'll move on to somebody else. I think at Lincoln and even in the elementary models, with in terms of the AM/PM models, where students are, some students are in the class in the morning, others are in the class in the afternoon, what sort of cleaning or disinfecting are we looking at, if any, for that afternoon lunch break period?
So, go ahead, Elaine.
No, that's fine. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, in talking to Adam on what that hour would look like with the help of additional custodial staff, especially during that hour, a lot of it would be sanitization of all the common surfaces, obviously desks, desktops and whatnot. So we do have sanitizing ionizers and things like that to be able to navigate that. But obviously a plan would have to be developed because there is about an hour's worth of time to be able to do that. So obviously Lincoln and even some of the other buildings, I mean, there are a lot of classrooms to take care of. So it wouldn't be necessarily a full deep clean, but definitely a sanitization of any of those common surfaces. But I'm sure that Adam could probably chime in with additional details on that.
Sorry, was the first part of the question about the airflow or the sanitation?
The sanitation. If we do an AM/PM model, either at Lincoln or at the elementary schools, what kind of cleaning should we expect between those cohort periods?
The as we presented last week, the biggest this would be the biggest role of that additional day custodian, which would be able to handle that. That the brunt of that work. Without that additional staff member, it would be extremely challenging. But with that additional staff member, it would be possible.
Okay. And then just again about the hybrid models, I noticed on some of the slides for the elementary schools that there was sort of a caveat for that cohort C, who were, you know, we're pooling our IEP and potentially other groups of students who really have a need for that in-person learning model. It sounds to me like if we move to the hybrid, those students might be displaced because of the use of classrooms by the other students. And so I was just wondering if maybe Mary or somebody else who could help me understand how that would work.
Can you repeat the first part just so I make sure I'm directing the specific response?
Sure. So if cohort C is our IEP students, our ELL students, our kind of our equity need students is how I'm thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And we move to a hybrid model that incorporates an A cohort or B cohort. Will there be space to the extent that we can anticipate safeguarded for that cohort? Or would it be A and B takes priority and C can come in maybe?
Okay, thank you. Yeah. And maybe Sarah Taborski, our Director of Student Services, can elaborate. But essentially, when we think about this, we're almost thinking that that cohort C or D, depending if it's elementary or middle school, they're going to get access to more. And so they would never get access to less, because it would need to be consistent with their need from an equity standpoint to have more services. Mm-hmm. So we would never have a situation where they would be eligible for less. Now, whether or not as a family they chose to partake in person would certainly be a family's choice, and something that we could have collaborative conversations around, but our intention would be to provide them with more. But definitely Sarah could beautifully speak to that too.
I agree exactly what Mary just said related to, we wouldn't be displacing any of those students. We definitely have designated spaces and make sure that we have plans around making sure that they have adequate space to be apart from each other and other staff members.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you all so much.
Okay, thank you, Kim. Rachel.
Hi, thank you all. I will try to be brief, but I just want to thank you as well for just the detail in the presentation this evening. I think for myself, but I hope also for like our parent community that is listening, I hope that it has allowed them to understand concretely how these would look. And I think that was a big question in many people's minds as they were preparing to fill out the survey. I have a couple just general comments and then a little more detailed questions about a few of the different models. I think when I look at what concerned me last week, or I will say that I have a very different feeling this evening than I did at the end of the evening last week. And I think one of my big concerns was that I felt that there was some sort of disconnect between what was being presented and the feedback that we were hearing in the letters, in particular from the staff and teachers, which we know is one of the most important factors to make any of these options viable. And I feel like tonight we have heard from all of the stakeholders and we seem to be discussing more along the same lines, which makes me feel much more confident in our decision either tonight or, you know, therefore forthcoming. When I look at the hybrid scenarios, I really see the balance between convenience and Brian, as Brian mentioned, to, you know, our working families, our single parent families, and the need for a consistent place for their child to be during the workday, and then the safety of students and staff. And I know originally when we were engaging, I know that the convenience factor seemed to weigh much more heavily. I know many parents had said, you know, I want my child back in school. I want them to be consistently there. And so I understand why the full day model was presented originally. However, I think when people saw that, and I'll just speak for myself, when I saw that and some of the guidelines that were not being met, that safety aspect really comes into play and you realize how you can't have the convenience without the safety. The hybrid to me kind of sacrifices both of those. I don't particularly see any of the hybrid models being more convenient for working families or you know, single parent households or anyone, I guess, really that doesn't have the option to stay at home and supervise their children. Somewhat while or during the week. I also fear with the hybrid that because of the expectations that we're putting on teachers being in class full time with those in-person students, I fear that the remote learning in some of those cases would be subpar again. And I think that that's what many people fear from the spring, that they didn't necessarily like the quality of what they were getting remotely. And I feel like they may be put back in that situation simply because we're asking the teachers in some cases to be doing almost two different jobs during the same school day. There simply isn't going to be the same quality either in the classroom or online. And I do see the remote learning as sacrificing some of that convenience, obviously. But I do see it fulfilling the safety needs. And to me, at this point, that is really the most important factor. You know, come October, perhaps we will see that as we reevaluate the hybrids, that maybe we can provide some more convenience while also acknowledging different safety needs in that moment. I would love to see, I understand why we selected the October date, and I don't think it's bad to have a certain date on the calendar, but I would love to see as we move forward, some different like data points or criteria in common to know when we would consider a move to the hybrid schedule, because I think that would help our community at large, and in particular the parent community, as they're listening to, you know, data and things coming back from the state and the IDPH, to know if we're moving in that direction, and not having to wait for a board meeting to know that this is something that at when these criteria are met, we will consider the move to the hybrid rather than, or in addition to perhaps the date on the calendar, which I think can kind of be arbitrary in the crazy, unpredictable COVID world that we're living in. One of my questions on the hybrid for the full days, in particular for the elementary, I know it's indicated that that Monday would be the group where everyone would be remote. And then Tuesday, Wednesday would be group A, and Thursday, Friday would be group B in person. I wondered just why Monday was chosen. And I would see that as something that perhaps the staff would be surveyed on to set up the, you know, the structure of that week. And even just wondering, like I had thought, well, what if Wednesday was the day? Would that allow for deeper cleaning on that day, kind of in the middle of the week between the two cohorts? But I'm not really sure how the cleaning takes place, or how long it takes place, or what we're foreseeing with that. So that was my question, I suppose, for maybe Mary or Adam.
Yes. Maybe you found someone's iteration somewhere that had blown out of their bag and it blew by your house, because we definitely at one point had Wednesday as the middle day for that reason, because we think from a logic standpoint that gives that middle of the week time and it kind of hits that reset. We went back and forth. I don't think that anyone feels strongly enough that they wouldn't be willing to switch it back to that. The rationale though for Monday was that given how many Mondays just in a typical calendar year are off or holidays, we thought that it might be better to avoid Mondays for just keeping kind of stable weekly schedules in those examples. And those weeks where there wouldn't be, you know, to that end, you know, it was really more for consistency. It's definitely easy to work around that and make sure that you're not having unfair access. The way you do it is you just make alterations on the week where Monday there's no school, and then you take away that Wednesday middle of the week break, and there was already a plan to accommodate for that. So if that's in the interest of the community, the board, that's a very easy thing to make happen without having any sacrifices for quality or, yeah.
And not that I see that as a major factor. I guess I just was curious more than anything. I have so many questions. I will conclude. But thank you so much for the for all of the information. I feel much better prepared personally as a parent, and also as a board member, to offer, I guess, a recommendation and just a decision. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. I had a question for the elementary principals. What hybrid do you feel best suits the elementary? Do you feel it would be the half day, as in being the safest, following the guidelines to a more fuller extent than just the bare minimum? What hybrid plan do you feel would be the best fit for an elementary?
I think the AM/PM one is best. I think it's nice when we are ready for that to have a chance to be seen every day, for the teacher to see the students every single day. And especially because we have a long enough block in the middle to do the deep clean, that to me was the most important thing, that we would have some time to do that. Looking at the schedule, it looks like that will be possible. So for me, the fact that they'd be able to see their teacher every day, then it sets them up for, less time remotely, you know, and the teachers can even set up the students for success, like, hey, I want you to work on this on the other half when you're not with me. So to me, that makes the most sense.
Okay, thank you. Do anybody else want to toss any feedback from the elementary?
I would just agree with Dan, and I think that the only other thing that I would add is that, you know, in some of the other models, whether it be the 2 days on, 2 days off, for the weekend and off, we really struggled a lot with what the kids at home would do in those times, because obviously if you're there for 2 full days, you can't teach 4 math lessons in 2 full days and expect them to be able to independently practice those things on the off days. Whereas with the AM/PM model, you could teach a lesson per day and then give them time in the other part of the day, whether it was that afternoon or the next morning, to then practice those concepts at home. So we thought that it, for elementary school kids, it was more, we could stick to better teaching practices of a short direct instruction lesson followed by independent practice.
Okay. And I just wanted to add too, if you don't mind, I just wanted to point out that first grade, I completely agree with that model in terms of AM and PM to avoid the lunch hour, but it would look a little bit different for kindergarten. So I just wanted to point that out, that it would not be consistent between preschool and kindergarten would be the same, but it would be different for first grade, because we would need to split up the AM sections and the PM sections.
Right. Yeah, that's a whole other ball of wax. Okay, and I know you just, Paul, you had mentioned that really kind of the full remote is the best option for Lincoln, in the sense because the hybrids are so wonky. If you knew for sure that you could have an A and a B, just that cohort with meeting those guidelines of the 6 feet at all times and the mask wearing, is that potentially at all possible, or do you just not know until you know numbers of who would continue to stay remote and who would want to do hybrid?
Yeah, so a lot of the questions that I got from parents through the last couple of weeks were like specifics. They were asking very specific questions, and so I was able to give like guidelines, but since we're so tied to the staffing structure, without those numbers, it's really hard to predict on it. I will say that, again, some of our grade levels are a little bit larger than others, so I think the incoming group is right at like 270, so we will average 30. So if you're averaging 30, you figure a couple above, a couple below, but you would need at least 10 off the top, 8 to 10 off from each one of the classrooms to want to go remote for us to be able to go down to an A-B schedule. So we would need, again, an average of that 20, 22, 24 to be able to do it, because we do have, you know, larger kids, potentially smaller classrooms in some capacities in the building. So we would need that data to be able to accurately assess if we can truly go to an A and B day.
Okay, thank you. In regards to busing, Adam, is there any numbers on how many people said they wanted to do busing before we started, you know, delving into different plans and ideas when people were registering? Do we have any numbers on that at all?
Not complete numbers. If you remember early on during the registration process, we took the approach to not charge anyone for buses to avoid reimbursement. Right. So as a result of that, we knew that, you know, people did register, but we also know that a lot of people were still unsure about the beginning of the year. They did not register for busing. Typically, under normal circumstances, we've had about 900 riders in a year. With the 50, you know, 50 or less in the 10 buses, at the most we'd be able to have is in a normal environment would be 500. But again, if we're talking about A days and B days and half days, you know, there's definitely some potential. So if we're moving to a hybrid option and looking at that specific hybrid option, we definitely have to figure out how many individuals would be riding the bus.
I'm sorry, what was the last part?
How many kids would be riding the bus?
Okay. Okay. One quick question, Mary, now with the hybrid, full remote start, hybrid working into October 19th, remote is still an option after the October 19th date, is that correct?
Yes, we intend to probably not realistically be able to even consider remote coming off the table until we would transition to a phase five.
Okay, so, just wanted to make sure that was still.
And for that matter, you know, to just reiterate too, that if it would be determined that, you know, the criteria hadn't been met as we've kind of been talking about and thinking about, I don't think anyone would see there to be a reason why at that date, all of a sudden that when, you know, a full remote wouldn't continue. Obviously we have the bias that we would believe it would be successful. And we believe by that point, families would change maybe the way that they're seeing the remote experience as a result of an improved experience compared to last spring.
Okay. I have a couple just simple questions. These are, you know, like a lot of parents have asked in regards to remote and just the terms of keeping kids accountable, like with homework assignments, the grading, not necessarily specific that, but testing and quizzing. You know, they want to know how would a test and a quiz take place remotely, and that, just that question.
Yeah, it's a good one. So I think we would think first about assessment practices and make sure that we're using a really comprehensive assessment approach, and thinking about what tools we have available to us to employ virtually. And there are a lot of great tech tools that I think can allow teachers to use formative and summative assessment data to really drive instruction. For things like quizzes and tests, which we categorize as more of a summative assessment, we would want to make sure that we had measures in place to do that successfully, and that we wouldn't, again, be incentivizing any older sibling to take that assessment, you know, where all those things that happen. And we know that in college, any of us who follow this, there's widespread cheating that happens in virtual and remote. So we really would want to weave in strong conversations with our students and parents about weaving in ethical practices. And I think it's not too early to be having those conversations with young children about what it means to show your teacher what you're able to do, and make sure that our practices are not punitive and that they're high stakes assessments. We don't have any reason with elementary students to do, you know, punitive models of assessment. We want our students to show us what they can do so that we can alter our instruction to make them understand more. And if they're showing us that they can master content, that we want to be ready to provide them with new challenges. And so it's going to be a shift in some of our practices, and we've got to be adapted to that. Things like MAP assessments, where we know those have implications for the way students can qualify for enrichment coursework. We're working closely with other districts who are grappling with these questions. And we're trying to really think outside the box and think, you know, do we use MAP assessment to use more diagnostic information to inform instruction? And do we use alternate methods to determine eligibility for advanced coursework? Maybe that is the right thing. There are ways to use virtual assessments and have a monitoring aspect where you can be monitoring who's taking the assessment. Although, to be transparent, that's not quite going to be the focus of our time. Is, you know, we're not the ACT, we don't want to devote too much time into that type of surveillance with assessments. But I think there's already some good possibilities that we're already beginning to think about, and I'm sure there will be many more as we go forward.
Okay, thank you. And one other just a simple question in regard to in full or even with the hybrid. Symptoms that Dan had referenced to that were on IDPH or the ISBE guidelines. So if any child has, it doesn't even have to be just a fever, or it can be just coughing. It could be a runny nose. It could be an upset stomach. All the symptoms that were listed could keep that child away, whether
do they have to wait then 2 weeks? Is that assuming it's a COVID symptom, or when those symptoms alleviate themselves without having been tested?
I can take that one.
Okay.
So related to those questions of COVID-like symptoms, but not a diagnosis, we're still waiting on some clarification from Department of Health on that, simply because if there was a COVID test showing it's not COVID, then having them come back in the building may make sense. It could be related to another condition that a doctor provides documentation to that, and then we would have the child come back in as well. But we're not 100% sure on, is that acceptable, or must we still wait the 14 days?
Okay. So we're still even staying home with sniffles and with an upset stomach. Well, you should be, but you know, just a simple cough. I mean, people get coughs with allergies, but so even until you find out that whether or not it's COVID related or not, you'd still have to be out, even if it's 2 days, possibly three, whatever it might be.
Right. And my understanding right now, those tests are taking quite a bit longer than that.
Yeah.
So it would be at minimum the length of time to receive a test back.
Okay. That's good to know. Because then it just snowballs from there with, I mean, it doesn't even have COVID related because of just the symptoms themselves. So tonight we're gonna decide, you know, where we're gonna go move forward and is make a decision on what option we're gonna go with. Option three with the remote start and the hybrid starting October 19th, with the caveat that it could be later. You know, the governor could intercede and make it remote anyway for us. And depending on how the situation is nationwide, statewide, and COVID-wise, in that sense, that date could change and keep and just move a little further back. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And so then we will send out to parents if we would go with the hybrid model or with the hybrid to come, what hybrid model that they would choose from. Do we want to leave it at these three the hybrids that you have given? Do we want to, I don't know if you want to take it down or give that option out then to the parents? As a board too, do you want to have all the options out there? Because there's a lot of options. And it's, and for Lincoln especially, that one option where cohort A is in the morning on Monday, they're in the afternoon on Tuesday, they're in the morning again, then they're home, and then I don't know about that. I mean, that one's the craziest of them all. Should we just take one of those Lincoln ones right off? Because it just seems so crazy to have morning, afternoon, morning, and not there. It just seems crazy. Do we want to at least take one of those options off?
Can I ask a quick question?
Go ahead.
So if tonight we decide to go with option three, we're contemplating sending out a survey to staff and parents about what will the survey consist of, and when will it go out? And if it's not going to go out for, you know, weeks or a month, I don't know if it's necessary to talk tonight about the content of the survey. But I do have a question about if we, irrespective of what we decide tonight, there's going to be a remote learning element no matter what. And will there be some sort of survey or outreach to parents to put us in a position to assess what sort of internet capability families have? I think we need to ensure that there's internet equity and that all families have what they need in terms of internet capability to ensure, you know, all students are able to participate fully in remote learning. So I think that should be a priority before moving on to given choices about hybrid, different hybrid models. And also in the same vein, I think that, as I mentioned before, if we're going to do the full remote option, I do think we needed to make it a priority to brainstorm about what sort of support we're going to provide single parents and parents, two parents who are working full time. We need to provide options to them to ensure that their kids are going to be incorporated into this process completely.
I can speak to the recommendations you made. I think those are very specifically about internet knowledge of the needs of our district. We can provide a data, we can still get that information from our families. And I think there are many options that we can explore if we become aware of any vulnerable issues with accessing high-speed internet. And there's many things that districts have done in this past spring that we could learn from, what went well, what didn't go well. So there's a lot of knowledge in the field about how to work with the communities who have needs such as the ones you described. And then in terms of childcare, I can add, Elaine, I don't know if there's more, but we hear you loud and clear about that.
Okay, thank you, I appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, in regards to the working family and the single parent, which I understand, their dilemmas, but also in the safety sense, how many really would be wanting to use the services if we have those services available? Because then we still would have to get staff in order to be in there. I guess it's something to look into to see what the probability is and to what extent you could possibly have that addition. You couldn't have, 400, 500 kids. I'm just the sheer numbers and just thinking of what you could, possibly handle within that aspect of it.
Well, you'd be limited to 50. In a location just under guidance of phase four.
I can't hear you, Elaine, I'm sorry.
You'd be limited to the number of 50 in a location just by the guidance of phase four.
Okay. All right, well, that's good to know too. But in essence of, I know that I don't want to pick necessarily a hybrid plan for people, but I think in some ways too, I don't know how you feel about it, but the elimination, at least in Lincoln, of that hybrid C schedule, is that really a doable schedule?
Look at it, Paul. From our perspective,
I was going to say if you're asking me, I don't think it's sustainable for many reasons, But yeah, it was just an idea to show good faith of an opportunity to get more in person than what it is that we have. But for that one especially, the challenges definitely outweigh the positives.
Yeah, I mean, are you guys as a board willing to at least eliminate that one hybrid that has the schedule just all over, going from the morning into the afternoon? Any day of the week is a different day that you might attend. Are you guys willing to take that one off, Vicki?
Yes. Could I ask when this survey about hybrid options, it wouldn't need to be sent out right away. Like, we could delay it a little bit and think, because
Yeah, I was just going to say, because these are amazing options if you think about the time crunch and, you know, like how quickly they were, like, so well thought out, so detailed. But it could be if we waited another, you know, another few weeks, like different options might come in different, right? So, yeah, I mean, not that I'm putting pressure on you to come up with like an abundance of things, but it just might be that, you know, we might think a little bit, or we, like, administration might think a little bit more deeply about these and like kind of tweak things. But to your point, yes, I am totally fine with taking out that one unrealistic Lincoln option. Yes.
Jen?
I think yeah. Especially, oh. just jumping in real quickly, I think especially with a little bit more data to be able to I guess guide and lead our scheduling process a little bit. When Mary and I talked about that, these are not laminated like fully. This is 100%. It works out great. It's more so the ideas behind it and the possibilities for us to take a look at. But with that data, we can iron out some more of the details and have something definitely more specific, kind of like what was mentioned before.
Okay, Jen.
Yeah, so I also agree, I'm fine removing it. But what I would just recommend is, like, you know, for those, obviously we'll share out a documentation, I assume, after this meeting, or maybe the link's already gone out. So I don't remember now, I apologize. But I do think that in the survey, we should share, like, if on the hybrid options, if that's a survey that goes out, then I think it should talk about like the preference of the, like, whether it's administration, staff, teachers, like, we think for the elementary, you know, that this is based on the student and safety, teaching and learning, sustainability, those three caveats. This is how we would sequence and then ask for, you know, just to help guide, because the one thing I, you know, I worry about, I guess, is if we throw a lot at them, then the data is going to be skewed. So you're going to have all these percentages, and at the end, you're going to have, like, you know, 10 different options at 10%, and I'm making that up, but we should try to be helpful and try to give them kind of what we think is possibly the best. And if we think some are unrealistic, I think we should, you know, realistically then take them off. Like, let's not make this more complicated than it needs to be. Try to give them, I mean, we appreciate the thoroughness, but I think when it comes to the survey, if that's where we go, then I do think we need to help the parents, because it's just, this whole decision process just sucks for everybody. Like, I know it sucks for you guys, and then it sucks for us, and it sucks for the parents. It's just really rough. So anything we can do to help them, whether it's making it simple or, you know, giving some guidance of like why these were created, I just think would be, you know, beneficial for the community when it comes to the survey.
Good
point.
Jerry, you might not be there right now.
I would agree with actually removing one, for the same reasons. I think you know, given that it's unrealistic, it just doesn't make sense to put it out there if we don't really believe it's something that is truly achievable. So I'm in line with taking that off.
Okay. Kim?
I was just going to say I agree with a lot of what Jen had to say. I think simplifying and streamlining, especially if we're getting guidance from building administration, that it's probably not actually a practical solution that we're offering up. I think it's fine to limit the choices based on that information. I don't know if it goes without saying, but I wonder to the degree we can build a survey that allows for ranking of choices, as trying to force families to plan for a potential scenario that may or may not actually happen in the timeline that we're devising, to have some understanding of, like, what is the preference, as opposed to cultivating a feeling of this is what I'm limited to.
Okay, thank you. Brian?
I'm fine with that. So are we all, was there a consensus for option three?
Well, this was just, I'm just asking about removing at least that hybrid C option within, for Lincoln, for them to remove it, not to even consider it going forward to adjust and see what they need to do with either the plans that they have or adjusting and changing it to a different plan that they discover is a better option.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay. Rachel?
I'm fine with removing it.
Okay. Yep. Okay. And then now we'll just make, we'll go through and we will decide which option that we want the admin to go through with. And from this point on, I'll just go ahead and start. And I pick option 3, the full remote learning, the phase in hybrid with, October 19th is an aspirational day. And then also with the caveat that the principals, when you're developing these hybrid models, that they just that they decide which is the best, elementary wise and middle school wise, in a ranking or whatever you decide it might be, that this is the preferred choice of the options available. Vicki.
I agree. I would also support option 3, exactly for the same reason that people have been saying that even though, we want to keep everyone safe while providing the best possible education to our students, but we want to keep them safe, right? That's first and foremost. So I would go with option 3. And then even along the lines of, obviously we want to offer parents choices, right? Like we want to be able to be flexible and offer them choice. But even within the hybrid, if there's one hybrid option that is so much better than all the rest, then let's just offer that hybrid option. I don't want to offer choice just to offer choice. So if there's consensus and they think yes, this is going to keep the kids the most safe, this is what the teachers and staff feel good about, this is the best in terms of the kids' education, then let's go with that. So I don't want you to feel burdened. You have to come up with 2. I mean, if there's one that is, this is it, then let's just go with that. So yes, option 3.
John?
Yeah, I'm also option 3. Actually, I was there as soon as Elizabeth had shared that 2/3 of the union preferred the remote learning. I was there. So I was kind of there at the beginning. but I appreciate the thoroughness. And, I think it's very wise when Dan had said about the patience aspect of it. And I think we will learn a lot. Every day, it seems like we're learning more information. And the more time we can buy by starting off remote learning, I think we will be so much better. So I'm definitely supportive of it and appreciate the option. So thank you.
Jerry?
I think I would also support number 3. I think with the information that we learned over the last week and this evening, it makes the most sense, with the caveat that, having the flexibility on converting to a hybrid and really just learning what is the best route to go at that point. And, if we need a different route for Lincoln alone or, certain schools, let's just keep an open mind to that. We're not going to force it at that point in time. But for what we know right now, I would say that's probably the best route to go.
Thank you. Brian?
Yes, my choice is option 3, with, again, an emphasis on administration making it a priority to facilitate a coordination amongst families who don't have a stay-at-home parent. My preference is to not just say to them, hey, you can do Kids Corner. Maybe we can be creative and come up with a way to connect families who are in a similar situation, and maybe they can coordinate and come up with, households that can, one household can host 4 kids on Monday, another household, 4 kids on Tuesday, whatever. I would appreciate if we could be very aggressive in reaching out to these families, because this decision is going to impact them significantly. So having said that, yes, I'm on board with option three.
Okay. Rachel?
Yes, I strongly support option three. And I echo what Brian said. I think that even what we've seen in the past week, these remote learning groups for each grade level have already started popping up on Facebook. I would love to see the district facilitate that as much as possible, as much as I guess is within their power. And I feel strongly that our choice of option three and the remote learning now could potentially encourage the success of a hybrid at a later point. I think if we start with a hybrid now, I think we will see it fail. And I think if we start with remote learning now, we have a shot at having a successful hybrid potentially later in the year when circumstances are a little better, hopefully.
Okay, thank you. Kim?
I agree. I think I would be on board with option three for full remote learning until at least October 19th, if not potentially longer than that, depending on the circumstances. To me, I really feel that any return to in-person instruction at any level, whether it's full classroom capacity or even some of the partial kind of restructuring that we've tried to do, I think presents too much risk for our students, for our staff. And it also, as has been mentioned, I think presents a high likelihood of learning disruption to the degree that we eventually enter a phase where maybe we have to scale back from phase four to phase three, or as cases might begin to tick up as we enter the winter months. So full remote learning is the option that makes the most sense to me. And I think, Kristen, to your point about consistency and stability, I think that's the option that presents the greatest amount of that, not just for our littlest learners at the early childhood level, but also for students across the spectrum, right? It's the least amount of disruption. Certainly, Brian, I echo what you say as far as the logistical challenges that single parent families and two parent working families will face. I don't discount that at all, but I'm glad that we've all been able to come together to have a consensus that really safety is the biggest factor that we should be considering, and this strikes me as the safest plan that we could implement.
Okay, thank you, and I agree. This is the safest plan, and that's really what we want, everybody to be safe. For the kids, the staff, the parents, and for everybody that is in their lives that they have to take care of beyond their students. I wanna thank you all. Oh, I'm sorry. Option seems to be pretty unanimous. Is there anything further wise from us that you need any other direction in at this time?
No, I wanna thank you very much for your thoroughness of discussion and your attention tonight. I wanna thank Mary for all the work she put into the presentation. And we will take all of your input and put it to work. And I can't thank you enough. You've given us guidance to start our day tomorrow. So thank you.
Great. And I'm glad we had this meeting. I'm glad you all were able to participate. I feel like everybody had a piece in this, in our decision. And I thank you all very much for all the hard work you have done and all the hard work you are going to be doing. So thank you very much. And with that, we will... Can I get a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Adjourn.
Kim, did you second it?
I will now, yes, second.
Okay, thanks. Vice President Chung?
Yes.
Member Fay?
Yes.
Member Kobus?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
Member Rotroff?
Yes.
President Kowalczyk.
Yes. Okay, with that, I say everybody, thank you so much. Wasn't late, but you might have missed the news, and I apologize.